For the back side of the first page, it says that the EIR comment period for the San Pablo Dam project was September 26th, and I thought it was June 26th.
Yeah. So that should be it. That should be it.
What page are you on, I'm sorry?
Page 2.
Page 2, okay.
Which says commerce, the SREC, and the potential,
right.
The C potential. And then the very last line, it should say groups, two smaller groups than a town hall meeting, rather than that.
I'm sorry. Yep, under the minutes. Okay, that was from last month. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Okay. So they can't approve that question?
I move that they. Yeah.
And you
want
a motion?
Okay. I make a move.
I'll second.
Any discussion?
I don't really understand this thing. I'm supposed to, I've been trying to get a little group of money for us to use, but I haven't done it yet, but I'll try.
Yeah, it's a petty cash fund for $100, and the last time that we talked to Julie and Ian, they had sent a check to Baypoint, and so she had retrieved the check, and she was sending it back to
I just want to ask, you're getting $100, is this from the county administrator's office?
This is out of our account, that's the money that was deposited in our account.
Oh, with the county, huh? And you said somebody named Julie is sending it?
No, Julie and Nia, who is in charge of that.
Oh, okay. So it was sent by accident?
Deputy CAO.
Okay. Julie and Nia.
E-N-E-A. I have something to report. I did appear before the Chamber of Commerce last night, and I requested that we donate your annual funds to us. So they okayed $300, so we will be getting a check for $300 in the Treasury.
That goes to the county, though. It doesn't come to us, right?
Yeah, no, it will go to the county and in our account.
Okay.
Now, remember, we should be getting a statement showing our account. And that can't be touched by anybody else. So we can keep track of our funds through that account.
So she'll be getting a statement.
She should be getting a statement, and if you don't get it, then you need to touch it from our account.
Who is the person that you requested? Is this also this Julia and Nia?
No, we get the statement through the auditor's office.
Through auditor, okay.
Auditor controller's office.
Okay.
They do, they have a general ledger, and then they have supporting statements that go to the general ledger, like expenditures and appropriation statements. They have a revenue and estimated expense. An actual expense register.
Oh, okay.
I just have to know that I have set up another camera. Introduction of our speakers. We have Michelle Blackwell from East Bay Municipal Utility District, and we have Lieutenant Gordon from the Sheriff's Department, and we have Eleanor Lane and removed with the previous mayor chair. So if I missed anybody, let me know. And Terrence Chung, who will be here late, he's having to attend a youth program meeting with the city of Richmond. Public comment?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but 2 months ago I asked you if I could, we could put the different projects that I agreed to follow up on in this area on the map, on the agenda. And I noticed you've got it actually to be presented by Terrence, but I'd like to give a little update also on what I talked to Patty Cookson yesterday on the Santa Rita Road issue and the 4600 Hilltop Drive issue, and she told me that just yesterday she was going into John Joy's office to talk to him. They've had a problem because they're shorthanded, and she's trying to cover a huge area. She's been trying to cover North Richmond and here, so she's had to concentrate on North Richmond, but there's a new individual named Vincent who will be just got hired and who will be working in North Richmond so she can come back over here. And so she gave me a copy of the code enforcement, but not much has happened, and she even told me that because she hadn't had time to do anything. And that they will be concentrating on Santa Rita Road. They're aware of it, the abandoned vehicles and that one property that's filthy, you know. And she said they're going to take care of that. 4600 Hilltop Drive, I noticed and I told her this, that they're starting to move things around and it looks like they're doing something. She says they are working on getting that squared away. And there's one vehicle abatement officer named Jim McCulley who only works 1 to 2 days a week, but they're trying to do something about that. But right now they're really swamped. And as far as Star Ocampo, the lady that Eleanor Loynes had me follow up on, I sent notices to both the fire district and Patty Cookson about the trees that were blocking the sidewalk where she couldn't even see, and it really was bad. You couldn't see. And they've been cut down. I'm not sure who did that because I know Eleanor was working on it too, so she's really happy. She called me up. But she has another issue now with a tree hanging over, and it's really bad. I mean, it's just this one branch hanging over, and it's killing things. And she also would like to have behind the fire station and between her house and the fire station is really overgrown, so I'm going to report that for her. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Are you still in public? This is the public comment. I just wanted to let you know that City of Richmond has now redesignated their police activities, so there's Northern, Central and Southern districts, and so there will be 3 officers who will be around in this area all the time, and so you might want to set up a meeting with them and say hello, and Officer Ron Carmichael is one of them, and Mary stopped by the house twice yesterday, but this is really interesting to talk with him. Thank you.
Yes, Jim? Yes, Barbara, I wonder, I know this is a little comment, but I wonder if I could defer to the discussion of the change in the map to the component. Okay, thank you.
I want to comment on one item, and that is the fact that you probably read it in the paper already, but the first responders haven't called yet. So, are you really pleased about that? Did you have a comment on that?
Yes. Now, have you seen the article in the Chronicle today?
No.
So the article in the Chronicle made the comment that there was like a 1-year time limit. Mm-hmm. But I actually got a call from Fire Chief Banks, and he did not mention that at all. And he said as far as he felt that they were and think it was just going to be a long time thing. The only thing is that Pinole is not involved yet. And they will be working with Pinole to see if they can step in and be a part of the automatic aid agreement also.
Okay.
No,
the
city council did delegate their resolution to the chief. They said that it would be just for a year, and in that interim that they would work out a more comprehensive
solution. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, we had several fires in our neighborhood. We had one last year where a house burned down, and they had County, Olinda, and Pinole fire engines coming up there, but it took quite a while to get up there. But they had several different districts coming up there. But I don't remember seeing Richmond. I took pictures of it, so.
Very
good. Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Harvey?
I've got a question on the whole police thing. I'm with talking about the problem between West County or whoever they are, or Richmond, whoever they are. But time goes on, I look back at Lasco, the two particular organizations that somehow decide that most of this stuff should go to Richmond, you know, to incorporate Richmond. And they do this with impunity, because what about fire protection? What about police protection? They're making these magnanimous decisions on whether this parcel of land and that parcel of land goes for incorporation, but for supplement services, as they say, police and fire protection are somewhat important, okay? You know?
I agree.
I mean, it's not as important as some of the places in Indiana by the Homeland Security Department, you know, the popcorn factory, or no, that's the Amish popcorn factory. I got my metaphors mixed.
Yes, but I agree with you.
Well, have anybody asked a question before?
Well, in my discussion in the presentation.
Who's in charge is my question, really?
Well, it was done by whoever the supervisor was at that time at Lasco and the city of Richmond. And if they made it impossible for us to incorporate, unless we can get special legislation through, because there's a strip of land that separates El Serrano too, there's an actual strip that goes across. And I think that was a very unfair thing to do. And I hope that we can look into that and see what we can do about it.
Well,
right now, excuse me, mm-hmm. Right now, the way it stands, the entire city of Richmond has to vote on whether or not part of that became El Serrano. The whole city, which is ridiculous. That's not who voted to get in.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
What do you think about the El Serrano MAC writing a letter to the Richmond Planning Department and asking for information as to how this occurred? So we can. I would love to see the background on how that little strip of land on May Road, you know, how that occurred, how that.
Well, we can write it to Supervisor Joya, but remember, under the new rules, we can't write.
That's right. Letter. We'll write it to and then find out how did this happen and what can we do about it? You know, because it really ties us down as to what we can do.
Yes, yes.
So this is public comment. We're not supposed to really, you know, respond or make decisions. So, and we can have this on the agenda at the next meeting to discuss.
That's what I really meant to say. And I would be glad to write a sample letter, and I'm sure other people would, just a simple request. And, yeah.
All right, last one, you brought up the public system. You can't go to the last one. Is there anyone here that can ask that kind of question that I answered?
That's a good point. Thank you, Michelle. Sometimes, I don't want to take all your time now. I can probably give you some background history. With Lasco, it took them a year and a half to allow Richmond to annex the property of 50 acres across the A&M Road because the city had said that they would build a fire station when Carriage Hills North and South were annexed, and they didn't do it. So after a year and a half of back and forth debate, approving and taking back their approval, they agreed to let Richmond annex it only after the fire station was built, and that was how we got the fire station on Valley View of A&M Road. And most of the other parcels that came across were privately owned, and wanted, or their owners agreed to go into the city of Richmond, and that's how the city was able to take it in with Black Horse Poop.
Right. Thank you. Any other comments? Well, we're going to go on. There's nothing under consent items. We have a presentation by consent item.
Agreed, folks. For the most part, well, let me put it this way. This time last year, crime was much higher than it is right now. You know, hopefully we can keep it that way. Some of the things that we've had a test project that we did in El Sobrante, we wanted to see if I were the program actually worked over here, it worked dramatically. In fact, you went down, I had a crime analysis done just this week, and this was the average. In March, you had 14, and then you went down to 5. And it had a steady decrease, and this was probably your average through the first quarter. This is all Mr. Bolton just goes around and basically he sees your garage and he leaves your brochure and they talk to you and educate you. This is all crime prevention, proactive policing, the ideal situation. I mean, again, I always come to you and tell you that the reactive police agency to me is just it's ridiculous because it's already happening. You're not going to be happy with us just taking a report and not capturing the perpetrator. So it's always fun. Yeah, for me to see success in a proactive program. Some of the events of the month, the only thing that was real noteworthy was you had it was a dispute over fireworks. I want to say this happened in the end of June, but it may have been closer to the 4th of July. There was some sort of dispute over fireworks and word exchange, and subsequently, there's an exchange between two people on the sidewalk, which involves a male walking toward the female and being pretty aggressive. And an innocent bystander, Good Samaritan, walks across the street, and the perpetrator pulls his gun out and he shoots him in the shin. And he's going to be okay.
I mean, who's going to be okay, the shin guy?
Oh, the shin guy's a commodity perpetrator, and he's in jail, so hopefully, you know, whatever happened to him, you know, case will run, hopefully justice is served, but the guy's going to be okay. And other than that, unless you have some questions that I may be able to answer, I can't really think of anything that was a highlight.
Well, congratulations. I don't know if it's me, but I, or if it's in fact reality, noticed an awful lot more cruisers. It's Richmond, City of Richmond cruisers mostly in the area in the last month. And maybe also the sheriff, but I was noticing the cars, and that they were City of Richmond police cars. So I'm wondering if additional patrolling might also have influenced the numbers. I don't know if you noticed or anybody else noticed.
Well, I know what their program is, and it'd probably be better for them to come and explain it. See, I can't explain how that happened. Maybe not know Chris Maxwell. Let me explain to you what they did. They had a central deployment strategy, and it had it for years. And what they would do is basically the Richmond Police Department would try to police the entire city of Richmond from a central point, which in the police world, that's a pretty tough task because you're all coming from central Richmond. So subsequently, they would spread themselves thin, for lack of a better term. So what they did is they broke down, they went to a community policing model, and what they did is they restructured. They put, just like you said, they went to three distinct districts, and the big deal is accountability. He has three captains who basically do what I do. And they are responsible for their districts. So what you're seeing is the accountability is kicking in. So, you do see some more cruisers, and they're pretty much doing what we do, just with better resources. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they did is you're going to see a lot more cruisers because they need to get between the central point to their staging point, which is out here. So, I don't know how much of an effect that will have. I don't want to give you any false hope. I don't know how much of an effect that will have on El Sobrante proper. Because we still end up, the bottom line is I have one police officer dedicated, and if that guy gets called off on anything, any significant crime, reduces my staffing by 50%. I may have a minimum of four guys on. And the difference between us and those guys is we have everything from North Britain all the way to Fort Cox. So if you take my B3 car, which is on the Bronte away, and you get coverage from B1, which is the Monte Carlo Manor slash North Richmond area. So that's where we hurt. But I would tell you that the best picture would be for me to have we work well with those guys. Anthony Williams is their guy. And Anthony and I have worked together on many a task force. He's a great guy. And I would say our working relationship will benefit Elsa Bronte for sure. Because he's a guy that won't have a problem with it. If I say, hey, Anthony, I need some help on any given shift, he's willing to help. So we haven't had that type of relationship before because they just weren't able to do it with their deployment strategy. So that'll help.
I just want to say that on the 4th of July and the day after, I mean, we heard so many more huge booms going off than last year. I mean, it was really, really bad this year. We didn't call it in because I'm imagining you had calls from all over.
The fireworks at this point, I'm an old army guy, and I can tell you that from the time of we were kids, we played with it was torch compared to what you got a machine quarter stick with dynamite off.
Where did you get dynamite?
Oh, you can go to Chinatown and buy
dynamite?
M1 valve. It's not dynamite per se, but it's the explosive charge equivalent to a quarter stick.
Wow.
So, they're putting them in mailboxes and blowing things up.
Oh.
And, it's just mischief. And I shouldn't say that to dismiss it, but I can tell you on the 4th of July around here, tradition, I went to high school here, it's always been like this.
This year was pretty bad.
There's some new stuff out there, I think, because I heard them, too.
And these kids, I saw some kids not too long ago. We actually went up and took their fireworks and put them into the juvenile system. But they had some, I forgot what the class of fireworks is. You shoot these things at the end of a baseball game. I mean, poof, they shoot through two. Wow. It's sort of neat to see them go off. But, they just give you little kids.
Yeah.
They shoot the cheapest thing. So we do.
Oh, do you have a question?
The program that you mentioned since March, is that something that is going to continue, or is this just a pilot?
We're giving it the good old college try. It worked out so well for Elsa Bronte. We're going to expand the program. I'm going to keep the guy in Elsa Bronte, Mr. Bolden, here because he works out of the substation here. And Arnold does an excellent job locally. He knows everyone. I think he's a member of the chamber at the state. We're going to expand it to other areas of West County because it helps you also, all the collateral areas that may affect you.
And does it require additional funding or?
Great. Volunteer. It's been a little creative thinking on how we're going to get this guy mobile and some people, were required to get out of their comfort zone and the other offices, but, I sure am. Hey, if you got too much trouble, we bail them out. So it worked well.
So he's a volunteer?
Yes.
Yeah.
He does an incredible job. I mean, this guy's passed out about 200 of these things.
So when we lose the volunteer, then we lose the program?
It'll scale the program back. As long as I'm here, I'm going to require the officers to participate also.
Mm-hmm.
The cops, I give them the same brochures, and if they see something, if they're not busy, but so what will happen, without the volunteer, they scale back from 200 issues to maybe,
If this volunteer is going around, if he saw something where there was a crime that was being committed, and I understand that it's just telling people that they're open for crime, but if he saw a situation where it looked really bad or where there might be a crime in, being committed, would he take care of that too? Would he call you? Or would
he has a direct line to the office. He's reported several.
And also these Richmond guys, if they're coming through here, would they respond to anything in Elsa Brandy? They wouldn't have a way of knowing if somebody called into the sheriff's department, would they? They wouldn't respond to Elsa Brandy.
No, they wouldn't respond to a call for service. But if they happen to see something on the way.
But if they just see it, then they might. Okay.
And establishing these working relationships in this model will be much easier. One is because a lot of us have worked together at the command level And the other thing is, now there's some accountability. So, you know, where if you deploy from Central, you can always have an excuse to be quite frank, to go back to Central and not see anything. They're just put those blinders on, you know, that freeway and go right back to, you know, McDonald's off and go home. Well, now, you know, with the community policing model, they're going to be required to go through the service streets and everything. If they may see something to root, and they know that we work well together and won't, you know, won't battle them over jurisdiction, it'll be much better.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, we appreciate you coming.
Yes.
And if you have a copy of that, we'd like to have it.
Sure, yeah, I have a copy right here. And also, you can catch all this information on the website outside of the analysis.
Okay.
The rest of it is all posted on the website.
Thank you very much.
Karen is
the next speaker. He isn't here yet, so we're going to move on. And so we have Michelle Basso. You're on next.
I don't have a whole lot of work. We have separate comments to the draft the IRR, including all the issues of comments. So it wasn't a huge amount. On the other hand, there was some good stuff in here, and I don't think everyone participated in giving those comments to our EIR consultants are reviewing all the comments now and putting together responses. And responses are always included in the final EIR. And they'll be looking at if any of the suggestions or ideas incorporated into the project. And we'll be looking at all that different stuff. So that'll be going on now for the next probably month. And then I would expect that a final EIR would be probably coming out sometime in late August or September. It'll be like a 10-day period between the time it comes out and the time the board vote on whether it's going to approve or not, and there'll be a public meeting. The board will vote on it in a public meeting, so there'll be opportunity for the public to come. As soon as it's out, I'll, you know, call them again, so that you guys know, and they'll process it off the web. They'll mail it, but probably you want to get it that same day afterwards. If you have time to review it and stuff before the board meeting. And so what I'd like to do is have you go over the memo I wrote that was some of the additional changes. And it's it did pass in a 5-0 vote. The effective date was July 1st, 2006. The main thing is that if you're currently in an elected position on a MAC, you will finish out your term. For each MAC, a quorum, now this is important, shall be a majority or the total number of authorized positions on the council, not a majority of the total number of positions filled. A MAC may only take action by a majority vote of the total number of authorized positions, not by a majority vote of the quorum. So that means if we have four members here, if we only have three members here, we wouldn't have a quorum, so we couldn't have a meeting in the first place.
Yes. What are authorized positions?
Those are the ones
versus total number of filled positions. What are those?
Okay, positions? Authorized would be in our case we are authorized 7 positions and 2 alternates.
Mm-hmm.
We have 1 alternate position vacant.
Mm-hmm.
So our total number of positions really is 7 because mm-hmm. the alternates fill in if a full time member is not able to attend.
So we have 7 authorized positions.
We have 7 authorized positions. There was there was discussion on allowing every supervisor to decide whether they wanted 5 members or 7 members on that, and that they left that up to that supervisor. And as you know, I spoke for retaining the 7 members. Supervisor Joya did say in that meeting that he would keep us at 7 positions and not reduce us to 5. So, you know, that was his commitment in that meeting.
Is that 7 plus 2 alternates, is your understanding?
Now, the alternate is still under discussion. You know, under the resolution, he even said that, but that's going to take longer than the meeting. I spoke at the meeting in opposition to the change, and I also spoke that if they reduce this to 5 members, we're already so limited, and the fact that we can't have the public be a voting member of our committee is a real problem. So Supervisor Joya called me the next day and said that he's willing to consider for Elsperanti only a resolution that would allow us to have only one of our members on a committee, or 2 members on the committee, or 3 on the committee, and have the public on that committee, and have them have voting rights. So I'm proposing a resolution to that, to be voted on tonight.
Okay.
Such a committee would operate in the ground.
Yeah,
after he knows.
Yeah, it's under my resolution at the very last sentence. It says all such committees would be under the ground rule. And there was some talk about the savings. They were saying they would save $4,000 per election for an average of $13,000. However, in talking to Julianne afterwards, she said that not always do they have an election every year.
No, they didn't even have one.
So, you know, if there wouldn't be a steady supply of funds there. She didn't seem real hopeful. She said that's something that the CAO's office would have to, and that's the county administrator's office, in case anybody didn't know what that meant. She happens to be a deputy CAO.
Sure. I'm not quite sure I understand what this resolution is. You want to, why you're doing this, to have count, to have 1, 2, or 3 or no council members, and add members from the public with voting for. Why are you, since now it will end up just being appointed members only, why are you going to that? Why are you trying to bring public members in? What is that about?
Okay, the reason I feel that we need public members, in fact, we need them now. We need their expertise and we need their help. Mm-hmm. We're spread really, really thin, and we need people who can volunteer their time and bring us, you know, expert testimony and donate their time. We need that now.
Ms. John Joy doesn't like that.
Yeah,
he doesn't like me, my testimony, because I don't agree with everything he says. So, I mean, what kind, are you saying you want public members that will just agree with everything you want?
I'm not saying that.
I'm just
saying that we would recommend them, the members, and he would have to approve them. That would definitely have to happen. I mean, that's what something we've been pushing for. That's something we wanted before.
Do the other MACs have public members on theirs? Do they have subcommittees with public members, the other MACs?
They can't have voting members because there's a resolution that says all MACs can only be made up of 3 MAC members and have voting members.
All MAC subcommittees? Is it?
All the MAC subcommittees. And he gave every one of us a copy of that. He turned to twice. He gave us a copy of that resolution.
So you're asking for a new resolution from the county?
Yes.
To cover all MACs or just cover one?
No. It says specifically, if you read the resolution, mm-hmm. I recommend the following motion. The Elsperanti MAC requests Supervisor Joya to write a resolution to address the membership of the Elsperanti MAC subcommittee. On the subcommittees, we may have a membership of 1, 2, 3, or 0 council members, plus members of the public with voting rights. The membership of such committee would be recommended and voted on by the MAC and approved for membership by Supervisor Joya. all subcommittees would be under the Brown Act. That is my resolution. My motion. Yes, Susan?
I don't know. Robert's order very well, but I have to offer the amendment to yours. And then I don't understand how we have zero council members in a subcommittee up in there. So I would like to include the zero.
You would like to include the zero? We would have to vote on the amendment. So there is amendment on there. Is there a second?
So what you want to be here? I mean, we've been talking about your memo, so your memo includes the motion, but we're just discussing it. So can't we just discuss it? Please.
We can.
And you didn't actually state it as a motion right now. You're saying you're
proposing.
Oh, yeah. So I think we're just talking about it. And I mean, I'd be interested in your reasoning for having zero, what you were thinking about, and how a committee would function. Because I agree, it's hard for me to understand why you have no members, but I'm sure there's something you're thinking about.
Well, if cleanup committee, if you had a group that was going to do the cleanup committee, and we didn't have the, you know, the council members didn't have the time, we could give them the instructions to do that and have them report back to us.
Yeah, and I think that just, I mean, to me too, another, just a larger question, which is, and we talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, there are subcommittees at the MAC that maybe take on some of the responsibility of what the MAC has. And then there are community events, I mean, things like the stroll and things like the cleanup that seem not like, you know, important voting matters before the community that we would advise the supervisors. They're actually services that we're providing in a way. And it seems to me that we shouldn't have to follow the Brown Act for a group of people trying to get together to plan a cleanup day, or a group of people trying to get together to decide what the banner looks like for the stroll. I mean, these are not critical issues for the public. It's a service for the public. So I think we need clarification on that, because it's definitely...
If we set up the committee, and remember, we recommend members on the committee,
uh-huh.
whether it's social or service or whatever it is, if we do that, then we have to have approval, and they have to be under the Brown Act.
Yeah, I just think we should get clarification, because the Brown Act is about things that will come before the MAC that would require a vote of the purpose of the Brown Act in restricting our communication and things is for issues that will come up for a vote of the MAC.
The committee would have to come back to the, they would be voting members and they would bring their recommendations back to the MAC. But you wouldn't just have them go off onto a corner and just do their own thing without us knowing what's going on.
I'm just saying, my point is that I would hate to have people volunteering their time for something like, you know, planning a service event that we're involved in, and have to go through. I mean, it's not that simple to, you know, post everything and have a public meeting. I mean, for things, so I'm just saying, maybe there are things that we do that aren't necessarily the purpose of what all these rules were set up for MAC, and maybe we can get some clarification on whether there are any of those things or not.
We can ask for clarification.
Because I would agree with you, if they're services, then no members need to be present, but otherwise, I think any other substantial matter that there was a subcommittee formed for, I think a MAC member should be on the committee.
Yes.
Could the Elsa Bring Mac just ask members of the community to do things without setting up a subcommittee? Just ask them, like, what you're saying. Do they have to actually form?
We would have to form. The way I understand it, we would have to form a subcommittee.
You could just ask volunteers to do something and...
Not the way we're set up.
That's why we should be doing planning and zoning then. Because that's what we're set up to do.
We're not talking about that.
I know, but that's a good reason.
This was a generous offer on his part, and I would hate to see us, you know, lose that ability to expand our capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's talking about losing that ability. I think we're all in support of that. I am. But my question is exactly what Marilyn's saying. There are community activities or community groups that seem like they just have to go through a lot of formal motions.
If they're back there doing their own thing and they're not connected to us, we can care less. They can do that now. That you have chamber doing things, and you have spotters doing things, and you have other convention groups doing things. You have that department. They can do that anyway. If they're not coming reporting back to us, yes.
This was my question when I had my hand raised before. I think it just could really impede what little work we could be trying to get done for these service type things. I mean, it really does seem like if we're planning a car wash, a community car wash, if there needs to be the Brown Act and if meetings to plan something like this needs to be noticed, I think that's really going to do us a huge disservice. If there are actual community members who are willing to volunteer to do some sort of event or a big garage sale or anything like that.
Well, that's kind of a separate item from what we're recommending here.
Yeah,
we're talking about subcommittees.
Right, but I don't think we understand. From this conversation, I would say that most of the Canadians don't understand what the MAC subcommittees are, and they will probably define it from the Board of Supervisors, but if you read our bylaws, this was an area where we clarified the agenda also, because there are certain things that are subcommittees. Like, we set up a land use formal subcommittee, and there are other things that are like community service updates. And they're different. And I think just we should get clarification on what kinds of activities that subcommittees would take on require a formal establishment in what things.
Right now we're being told that they all require a formal establishment. That's what we're being told. Okay.
Do they have any idea what kinds of stuff? Go ahead.
Well, we have a land use subcommittee. Go ahead. I can turn on that.
Nah, that's wrong.
Oh, I agree with the structure that you're proposing, because it seems to me that if something is on behalf of the MAC, that sort of has the county stamp on it, and possibly uses some funds that we have that are administered to the county, that there should be, that it needs to be within that structure. There's nothing anywhere that inhibits any individuals or groups from constituting themselves and achieving and providing service. But if we're doing a cleanup, part of it is for, I think, the profile of the MAC in the community to say, this is something, we exist as a body, as an arm of the county, or we serve on your behalf to represent you. And we don't have to do those things, too. That's totally voluntary, whether we do a cleanup or whether we participate in a stroll, whether we have our identity in doing that. There's nothing compelling us to do that. It's not something that we need to do to represent ourselves in the county. But it just seems like it's totally voluntary, and if the MAC wants to participate in those things, then the MAC is bound by its own rules and the way it's constituted to follow that structure. So, but anybody can do it in any other kind of formation that they want to, and the MAC can decide not to do it because we don't have the resources or we don't want to go through the hoopla. Any other discussion?
No? Are there any other, no, don't get me wrong here, are there any other MACs that don't do planning and zoning?
I tried to do a survey, and most of them that I talked to have two organizations. One does all the things that we're doing, and another group does the planning. And Kensington's an example. They do the planning, but then they have an improvement district that does everything else.
Because exactly what we're supposed to be doing, and this was told me when I first came in here, is up for grabs. What is our modus operandi?
Okay.
Because we do, sometimes we used to hear mosquito district talk. Now we kind of go here and there, but we don't have a real agenda, and that's a problem. We just kind of meet and it's not clear what we're supposed to be doing, and I think that's a real problem.
I think we're off the topic of whether or not we want this resolution, act to ask for this resolution or not for our subcommittee. And, you know, I'm willing to, you know, if we want an amendment to change the 02 and eliminate that, that's fine with me. But I think that if there's no other discussion, I'm going to call for a vote on the motion, and then you're going to make the amendment.
Is there a second? Okay, so Barbara made a motion.
Are you keeping it as it is?
Yes, because she's going to amend it.
So there's no second?
I mean, I can go ahead and amend it, but the proper thing is this is the motion, and then she's going to amend it, and we'll vote on the amendment.
So I'll second it so that I can amend it.
Those in favor?
Discussion.
We have to vote on the amendment first.
Okay.
So you want to read your amendment?
Oh, amendment. Yes. On the subcommittee, they have a membership of
1, 2, or 3. Okay. Is there a second to that amendment?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, let's get a show of hands. 4. So, There's 4. Oh, did you vote in favor of it?
No, against.
Okay.
Because I don't understand it.
Okay. That's fine.
So it's 4 to 1 to what?
4 to 3.
4 to 3.
You can because Tom.
Oh, so it's 4 to 3. Okay. So it passed, right?
Sorry?
It passed?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. I just want to make sure I have my
now we're on the original amendment as amended. So it's the same except that you take out the 0
cancel number. Oh, I thought the other one just passed.
It passed without the amendment.
Original motion passed with amendment or without?
The amendment passed.
The amendment passed. Okay. You vote on the amendment and then you vote on the original motion as amended.
Okay. How can you?
Yeah, you do. According to everything I've seen, you're on the amendment. Could I read the current motion? Sure. I recommend the following motion. The Altabrandy Act requests the Supervisory Joint to write a resolution to address the membership of the Altabrandy Act Subcommittee. On the subcommittees, we may have a membership of 1, 2, 3 council members, plus members of the public of voting rights. The membership of subcommittees would be recommended and voted on by the MAC and approved the membership by Supervisor Joya. All subcommittees would be under the Brown Act rules.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what I'm writing down here. I really don't. I'm sorry.
Because Supervisor Joya is no longer in office and the whole thing goes out the window, and shouldn't it be the first district supervisor?
This is a letter we're writing to the supervisor to ask him to put a motion forward to the board of supervisors. So I would assume that they can take care of our technical error.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we're on the original or the as amended.
So it's without 0 council members?
Yes, without 0 council members.
Okay.
I think we just voted on that.
That's what I was going to call
it. If you feel it's good, then just pass it. That's a great thing.
Yeah, okay.
I have no problem.
Okay, great.
We voted on it as amended.
But you're right. If the amendment did not pass, then we go back and have to vote on the original.
Okay. Let's go back to the...
Where are we?
Okay, the next item is FC1I.2, and it's...
If you recall, you allowed me to defer my point of call.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Yes,
I do.
Okay. I realize this is completely moot now, But since the map now, according to the Board of Supervisors, you guys do not represent us, you represent the Board of Supervisors. I'll register my complaint to you as a representative of the Board of Supervisors. This whole thing, changing it from a democratically elected board to an appointed board, it's a complete travesty. It's, the reasoning is completely specious, it's crap. You read it, you can just tell. I don't know what to say. I mean, this is really an effort. Now, I think the democratic process has its flaws. As Winston Churchill said, if you talk to the average voter for 5 minutes, you'll see what the problem with democracy is. But nevertheless, it's better than this, than what the supervisors have done. It's taken away the county input, and now they're saying that you guys don't represent us, you represent the supervisors. That's a complete travesty. I strenuously object. I also object to the way that they just slipped it in real quickly, under the radar. None of us knew about it. Just found out that I was right before. We didn't have time. I didn't have time to go there and testify against it. So, for all those reasons, I really objected this. I know it's moved now, but I wanted to register my objection.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You're first. Okay. Well, I object because I'll never get reappointed because it was said in the paper that John Joy thinks I'm disruptive, and the reason he thinks that, I'm sure, is because I am not improving of his general plan nor his redevelopment plan, and I use the opportunity of my election to this board to put forth that viewpoint, which is a viewpoint of a large number of people that live here in El Sobrany. So you won't have those kind of viewpoints anymore. You'll just hear what he wants to hear. And I think that's really dangerous for the community of El Sobrany.
You have something to say?
I think it would be nice to request that the supervisor actually come and discuss the change with us. I'd like to hear from the supervisor, you know, sort of where this came from and where the expectation is. I mean, I hear from some of the members of the public, and I feel myself also that this changes the body. And I think actually the comment that you were making earlier about, you know, what is our focus and what do we do. I think we can do all we want to decide ourselves, but clearly now there's another body making that decision for us, and if that's the case, then I would like to hear from that body what the direction may be or how they expect the local council to conduct themselves, because it's different if you're elected by members of the public. Even though we were sort of, and this is obviously why they made a change, because there's that inherent conflict. But if you're simply advising a supervisor and appointed by a supervisor, it feels like a different role. And I think that it would be helpful to actually have a discussion about that.
I agree. If he appoints you, can you get this dumped?
I'm sorry. Did you have something?
No.
I just wanted to make it that the whole thing started with Supervisor Glover, like Chico, and the Supervisor Chico and the stuff on the website.
There's also an eliminated paragraph in the page 3 of the recommendation that board from Chico and Glover. Whether we want to take up the discussion on those points with Supervisor Joy or not, the explanation is pretty much there. from their point of view.
I agree, it is there.
Yes,
Mr. Hart.
I agree with Tim, this is all mute or whatever. I'm not sure what it is anymore. But on the 29th of June, some little rinky-dink rag had an editorial. And they commented something to the effect that the Contra Costa supervisor, it appears, prefer an echo to diverse opinion on municipal advisory councils in unincorporated neighborhoods. Then they go on to talk about they have all these other elected positions and council boards within the county, but max, they don't want to have that. But anyway, so much for that. This is, it's new now. And a couple of the other councils that, you know, the Mount the Diablo Council, is it the Pepito, Pepper, Keyhole, or whatever?
Oh,
apparently she had a problem with some of the representation on that board. And Glover, well, I don't know what to say about him. In any event, there's a guy by the name of Hal Daly on the 8th of July that wrote an op-ed or whatever you want to call these things. I don't pay much attention to him because...
No, not at all. But he didn't.
And then there was another fellow from the North Richmond Council that says, no way, Jose. You know, it's clear he's not going to be appointed. But that's okay. You see, I agree with the paper. The supervisor wants an echo. And we see that in national politics all the time. So, just to let everybody know that, you know, he's building good rapport with the community.
Thank you. I would like to say that, you know, we can have him come in and talk to us. It's not going to change anything. It's a done deal. And I agree with Susan in that they pretty well spell out the reasons why they did this, and they added a couple of others in the meeting. For instance, North Richmond, that NAC chair, I guess it was the chair, wrote a letter in support of the casinos in spite of the fact that the county was fighting against the casinos. And so that perpetrated, you know, part of this action. And I understand that there was a brand new MAC being established in Marion Feifel's district. And so she wanted control of that MAC.
I understand. Okay. Well, I still think it's important that Board of Supervisors made a change that affects all of us and our entire community that we serve. Without ever appearing before us and talking about it, without ever asking anybody anything about it. I mean, they did a study. They apparently studied it for months, even years. Were you ever contacted? No. So I think it's important that someone just comes and discusses. I should ask that of the person who changed that, who participated in the change. But again, in addition to that, I would like to ask that the supervisor, this is something that I think in some ways could serve us well that this change came, because there are other strategies for decision making in the Valley, in El Cabrante, like what Kensington has, which is a community services district. So having just one MAC, just like we are operating with, trying to do everything and a very limited amount of time with very limited resources. So I think the supervisor could also discuss with us what some of the other options may be for how to proceed in the community. I mean, like he mentioned, that a corporation has a major hurdle, but there are other things that people may decide they would like to proceed with. So,
is it the council?
May I address some of my fellow council members? What was the date that you applied for election to this position that you're currently in? Do you remember?
I don't. But it was right before the deadline, I remember that.
It was, you sure it wasn't after the deadline, because the deadline was being extended?
Oh, no, I'm not.
5 days?
I don't know.
The deadline has been extended.
Okay. I know it was right before the deadline.
And what motivated you to fill in that, file that application to run for this office?
Communication. I did talk with Supervisor Joy about it.
Okay. Your comments for me are a little disingenuous because you were essentially recruited. And for you to say now, gosh, you know, being appointed by a supervisor, I have a tough time with that. Indirectly, you were recruited for that position.
Well, I don't, but, and you're free to say anything more. But personally, it didn't matter because at that time, whoever the supervisor might have recruited still had to, I mean, I also went out door-to-door campaigning. I also put signs out and talked to people, so it's different.
But the point is, you were motivated initially on your own without some prompting.
Okay, I think
and the point that I'm going to get to that is the apathy in the community as a whole. So the whole thing seems to be, as Mr. Harvey is saying, moot. Because if you don't have people stepping up to do it on their own, you know, at least the supervisors, whatever wisdom that they choose to use, are trying to get somebody in there to say something about their community.
Okay, I think what we need to do now.
By definition.
Thank you. I think what we need to do now is decide whether there's a consensus that we want Supervisor Joy to come and address the alternative. Is there a consensus?
Somebody, you mean that somebody like could move to ask him to come?
Well, I'm just asking for consensus, you know. I'm
not
asking.
Not me.
We don't want to.
No, so I have to listen to him all the time.
We don't want to.
Okay, good. He talks. That man talks.
Erica, you.
Well, I'm interested now in how this changes. I mean, clearly this was motivated by this desire to standardize and make consistent all the maps in the unincorporated areas.
Yes. There was already, by the way, one...
And yes, hold on. And yes, Supervisor Joya is willing to make a special resolution for the El Sabani map. So on some level, it also seems like... Okay, if every supervisor makes a special resolution for a different MAC in their district, we're back to square one, which is there's many different configurations going on. I'm interested now in do they have a picture, does the Board of Supervisors have a picture of what the purpose, sort of getting back to Marilyn's comment,
this is 2002.
As part of this whole effort to, you know, make more consistent, because I feel like that would really change what it is we're looking at, or, you know, is it land use issues? Is it other things?
Let me also address the fact that they are working, they did send us a questionnaire. There was a questionnaire that came out that we filled out and sent it back. Every MAC was sent this questionnaire. What they're doing is they're taking all this information, and they did state that CAO's office is going to be developing a handbook for the MACs.
What, did you get the questionnaire?
Yes, we got
the questionnaire. I never saw it.
Well, it probably had to be turned in by a certain date, and I just filled it out.
Can we see what you did, or can we see what you filled out?
I'm sure I probably kept a copy.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
You could put it in the next agenda just so we could see what you listed as our concerns.
No, they didn't ask concerns so much as, you know, what kind of committees did you have, and what, you know, what things had you discussed, and it was that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'll look and see if I'm sure I usually keep everything, so.
That'd be good.
Look for a call.
I'd like to just see what they're asking you, what kind of things they're looking for.
Okay. That'd be a question. Mm-hmm. Yes, Charlie.
I'm just curious as to what my fellow council members think prevents them, that this new change, this change will prevent them from doing that they can't do now. Or that they were able to do before that they can't do now because of it.
Can I answer that part?
Under the idea that you were appointed rather than elected.
I don't think it needs to change anything that we do. I think it is an opportunity to get clarification. I completely agree, and Marilyn said it earlier. I think that we try to do a lot of things. I don't think that we have a very clear focus, and I feel like our spread, my father said, we're spread really thin. We're trying to do everything. And I think this is an opportunity to hear What is the purpose? Who's defining it? And are there other structures that we can set up that would help in dealing with some of the other issues in the community?
I just don't understand why the council can't be, or every MAC member, every MAC committee decide that for themselves. Why are they looking to a higher authority about what the direction should be? That the disability that this council, in my experience, has been under.
Right, so there's been a change in something. Why not take the opportunity to try to move forward?
Okay, well, what we're going to do
to the lack of action.
What we're going to do now is see how many, I guess we've got to go to a vote, whether or not you want to contact Supervisor Joy, and we should probably put this on the next meeting agenda because we didn't have it on this one. If we're going to ask him to come, so we can, you know, if it, I don't know if you would like consensus for that.
Well, I'll be out of here, so it doesn't matter.
I don't care. You know, if people don't care,
like, because I'll just be going, no, no.
She doesn't care. Not, so there you don't have
consensus.
No,
as long as one is against it, then you don't have consensus.
No, right.
Then you have to take the vote.
Yes, you're forward. Right.
Yeah, we should be voting this one.
Well, I mean, it's not like, no, because it sounds like people don't want to do that. And so that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one.
Oh, goodness, where's my
phone? Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
With this new structural change that Freddie C. and Mary P. started off, according to the fact of December of 2005, there were certain expectations they had, in other words, to have them all appointed so that the building, each supervisor would get the proper feedback. Now, I think it might be important that Supervisor Joya brief this council as to what his expectations are. I think you were going forward with something to that effect, you know, henceforth, what his expectations are.
I think his expectations, I'm assuming for him, okay. But I would think his expectations would be the same as what the women did on me. I mean, except that, of course, who he appoints and who we recommend, and he, you know, has final say over, that certainly would influence, you know, how the council acts. But I would, yeah, they all have. Like, I have to agree.
But it's not
all
at that point,
he's all, he has to point an alternative.
Is that possible?
Pardon?
Would it be helpful for him to state it down explicitly?
I wouldn't for me because I, you know, I understand where he's coming from. I think I do.
I don't know.
So we're on to the next item, and that is FD2, and that is if all the outstanding MAC members did not receive compensation during the fiscal year from 2005 through December 2005, the chair will request the district secretary write a letter to the district attorney's office relaying the information that's required by law. The chair has the 460 forms of the inviting Osprey staff member. The 470 forms are included in the packet. So, you know, and I didn't get any.
No, we don't get paid. So.
You know, if we're all in agreement we didn't get any money, then we're going to ask that the district supervisor write the letter to the district attorney's office addressing that.
Can I ask a question? Why are we, I mean, we've been getting this since I came here, but we've never gotten paid. Why do we get this? It's an unpaid position. Are they trying to?
It's required because it was elected at that time. We got this when it was still an elected position. So, you know, we got it and we may not get it again.
No.
So, if we can do that, then, We're going to go on to the next item. Patrick Roach. I didn't know that Patrick Roach was expected to be here. He was going to show me a letter.
Right. He wanted to be here for the discussion.
Okay. That would be great. Right. And we can hold off.
When he thought he did at 9:05, he thought he was going to be here until 9:05.
Okay, and that's fine. We'll just hold off on that one, and we'll let you give your report since you weren't here earlier.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I am late.
But I understand.
I don't have too much to report on besides that. Well, the biggest thing is that last week the Board of Supervisors voted to make all the MACs more
useful. Yeah. We just discussed all of our
I mean, that's the biggest thing so far. Thursday morning, Public Works is going to be meeting with Linda to talk about streetlights. One of the things that have happened is some people are all the owner names and addresses and that's what they're going to So we're going to try to deal with the issue of more lighting in that area over there.
Okay.
And we were able to clarify if there was some confusion about what Public Works thought was that. So I think it'll be a little bit more supervisor joy and told them that, you know, we can't kind of go around in circles anymore. And so that's about it. The big thing is, the meeting I was at before is for Youth Center. So that supervisor joy is putting together. And so we have about 30 people tonight from certain suppliers in the church and the county to talk about how to make the Youth Center become a reality. And it's a long road and a lot of it's a county owned building on 41st and Bissell. It's the former public defender's office. It was used by RSS for some time, but it's vacant right now. The county paid debt service on that property, and so Supervisor Joya found out that there was the vacant piece of property. He wanted to dedicate that for the use of the youth center. He actually wanted it open like last year, and we all said it's not. Put the brakes on it, and let's make sure this is a really good project. So we have a really great facilitator that we hired on. She's kind of getting everything together and helping them pulling the and all the strings and everything and making sure that we do everything that she wants us to do.
I have a question regarding public works. Have they quit taking our streets out there?
They should move. Is that what?
They have been out there for a while.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll check the public works on that. Charles, have to hand up first and then I'm going
to go. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm trying to recall, wasn't there a landscape improvement bond issue that was brought before the voters here in El Segundo? That failed that pass. Hold on. 5 minutes. Back in 1997? In 96? 2000? Ms. Pauline, you're with a wealth of information. How about the recall here? It came up twice before voters, didn't it?
I'm not sure what year it came up, but in the past there were initiatives before voters and also got to do a landscaping.
That was along Camp Capitol Casino Road, wasn't it?
I don't know the specifics of the financial information like that. But regardless, in each of those instances, the mayor did not.
I'm well aware of that part.
Okay, but I can get different. R9, I think, also has some information. I'm not sure if you can get it. But I can get information on
that.
I just want to say thank you for getting for John Joy and you or whoever you work with to install these lights for these people in the community. So all they have to do is just pay the taxes every year on. I know that a lot of them could not afford to pay that because they're in fixed incomes. But I just want to say thank you for all of us because I saw it that way too. And it's really dark.
It is dark, and there is going to be a cost involved.
And, I mean, there's really different ways of going at it. That, the way the county has approached this is if we're going to put in a chunk of money, it's going to be several thousands of dollars to go through the process of LACFO and have a permit on it. We want to get as many people who are not currently in the L100 to be in that area. So I think it's a bigger area than what Linda had initially envisioned. It's a little bit more if you look at it, but so the county feels, you know, if we're going to do this, let's make sure that it's a wider effort, and so we don't have to keep spending the thousands of dollars whenever another neighborhood wants to come up to us and see what we want to do about that. So, yeah, we're going to move forward.
How many people does she have to get? How many signatures?
We'll find out tomorrow.
Can I ask Carrie something else after she gets through?
Yeah, just that, in addition to Reva's point, Castro Ranch Road from San Pablo Dam Road all the way to Alhambra Valley Road. Now, probably part of that is under the jurisdiction of the City of Richmond, but it's a very popular bicycle route, and I rode it the other day, and there was glass all up and down the road on both sides of the street, and there were trees that were into the road side so that the bike lane was blocked, and you had to ride around. Trees growing into the bike lanes, you know, they're just low, they haven't been trimmed. So if you're going to be contacting Public Works, if they could take care of their portion.
So Castro Ranch Road from
Castro Ranch
to
Alhambra Valley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody else had a question.
Susan does.
I don't know if this is a topic, but I just wanted, if you could pass along to Supervisor Joy an invitation to attend our scroll on September 7th.
He normally gets that point and he puts it on the calendar.
But I don't know if it's on his calendar now.
I'll make sure
Yeah, this is fun. I heard this was getting asked to ride bull.
To ride bull?
Yes.
To ride what?
Okay.
Yes, John.
I have one. Go ahead.
Well, since you were talking about Patrick and not being able to be here, I was just wanting it to be early on the agenda.
Well, see, I didn't know he was going to be here.
Oh, okay.
I didn't put it on there for him.
He was being a good county staff person.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I would have put it on there earlier.
Okay. So he didn't have it early.
Congratulations
again.
That'd be great.
Okay. You had a question?
Yeah. Whenever I drive down Dam Road, the fast lane on Dam Road, and particularly in the downtown business district, is incredibly full of potholes. I mean, there's one in the left turn lane, which you literally will bottom out. Is there any way we can get some kind of resurfacing done? It's so bad now, especially like in front of Walgreens and down here where you turn.
Is it the center turn lane?
It's the fast turn lane, fast lane in the business district, all down there, from El Portal to Avian. And then the turn lane, there's been a hole there at least 4 years now, and it's getting worse. Somehow I wonder if there's some way you can get a hold of County Public Works and do even some minor research and what else. It's really bad. Yeah.
Now, Marilyn gave an update on Santa Rita Road already, so is there anything new as far as you know that on Santa Rita Road? Okay.
I think what Patty was making her updates would be
okay. Are there any other questions for Karen? If not, we're going to move on. Okay. Thank you very much. Land use subcommittee minutes for May 20, 2006, and also on the match land use subcommittee agenda for July 10, 2006. We have a report on the meeting, and I'm pretty sure you're on there for this too.
I think Wendy's going to do it.
But we did talk about this meeting at the last meeting. I just hadn't had the minutes prepared, so I don't know whether people had a chance to look at them, but certainly if anybody has any questions or comments, be happy to.
My comment is this is superior work. I really appreciate the review and listening to the minutes and all the reviews of the general plan and extensive. And thank you for looking at it and that sort of work. She did a good job.
It's a good meeting, and we had members of the public present in the court. contributing to this. Anyone else have any questions, comments, anything about this minutes? Yes? Yeah? No.
I can't find it now, but you folks had asked you had made a suggestion that the county planning make Appian Way also a smaller business district because the Dam Road is a thoroughfare, and I just want to say, because I live in proximity to that, that is going to really change the character of Appian Way if you make it into a business district, because they've already got it planned for zero setback smart growth along a vast amount of it. And if you start making it into a business district, it's going to throw a lot of traffic that way, too. I mean, I'm opposed to that. I just have to say that because of the proximity where I live.
Yeah, and okay. I think that, thank you. And just to clarify, the smart growth, and what you're talking about, what the current plan is, mm-hmm. is any smart growth and rezoning of mixed use would make it a business district because it would allow for bottom floor retail. And I think more what we were talking about was trying to create some more centralized areas so that you don't have the full, whatever, 3-4 miles, whatever Appian Way is, long, intermittent development with retail, but you maybe have some smaller little areas with more focus. So I think that's what the questions were that we were raising. And does it make sense to do, you know, piece by piece all along the entire corridor, or might it make more sense to limit it? So we were more focused on limiting, not expanding mm-hmm. what the proposal looked like.
Have you seen what they're doing on Appian? You've got a condo conversion. I actually talked to somebody who had a friend that said they were getting 60 days out of there. That's a brand new condo conversion. And based on what you folks are asking for, how do you fit that into what you want? I mean, you've got brand new building and condo conversion going on Appian Way. It kind of, I mean, it doesn't fit with what's actually going on right now.
True. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea is for the community to be able to have some suggestions for what we think should be there. So if that's not what we think, be able to suggest ways that can fit in. So, but we didn't get that specific about actual mm-hmm. building use. That's kind of a ways off. There's a few steps before that. This first one was really looking at the all the materials that Patrick had handed out at our May MAC meeting mm-hmm. And really thumbing through it and going line by line and seeing if we understood, figuring out if there were questions, making, you know, suggestions or having comments. So that's what this meeting really focused on. Are there any other questions about those minutes? So do you want to talk about the July meeting? What we just have?
So what we did, what was it, Tuesday night? No, Monday night. Monday night is the packet that Patrick had handed out. Is that the packet here?
It's another packet. That was the second. So the second meeting that he came to, he handed out separate.
He handed out a second packet that actually broke up the project area, which is Appian Way from the triangle to San Pablo Dam Road, and then that section of San Pablo Dam Road from El Portal to Hillcrest. So he gave a thick packet of color images, lot by lot, with his proposed changes in terms of the mixed use. So he gave, he provided information on every lot, almost, what the current zoning designation is, like is it single family, is it an apartment, is it an office, is it commercial. And then right next to it, he gave a suggested proposal to mixed use. So Monday night, we went through it pretty much lot by lot and just highlighted what his changes were so we could at a glance look at what the impact would be, like exactly how much mixed use. And it's like Wendy said, it's pretty intermittent. There's not really any clusters or, you know, any main areas. It's all along Appian Way and a bit of San Pablo Dam Road. So we wanted to do that just to get, so the highlighted is what's proposed to be changed to mixed use and increased density. So we did that as a, so we would have a starting point. Oh, here comes Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
To just get a picture, a visual picture of what the proposal might mean or look like.
Okay, I guess there's nobody other. No, the only other thing was we did also at the May meeting and then revisited briefly at the last meeting, was looking at putting together a document of general plan policies, of suggested general plan policies that would come before the MAC, and I can email that document out to you. Please don't respond to me, and we hope to have a discussion about that at the next meeting.
What did you call them?
General plan policies for the El Sobrante area.
And that's
so
one you that you formulated.
Yeah, so there are current general plan policies that the county provided to us, and we had some additional suggestions that we wanted to put forward to the MAC.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead to Mr. Patrick Stroke. Thank you for coming.
We've been waiting for you.
The last MAC meeting, there was a question that was raised about the requirements to establish a development moratorium. Prepared a memo and a additional set of material for MAC members. So let me just bring this to you. What this is just, I guess, pass it down and take one pass it down, I guess. What it is a memo explaining the legal procedures by which you establish a development moratorium. I'll go to those in a moment. I've also, in the course of looking at this, Terrence also requested an updated list of applications in the El Sobrante area that are for the county. And I think this is a reasonably current list according to our applications reports. I've checked with the planners, the various planners that are working on these applications, where it is in terms of the status of the application. So let me just explain it maybe first, and then I'll go into my memo.
So these are not within the demo plan change area.
They're within the entire El Sobrante unincorporated portion of El Sobrante. So it covers both Appian Way, St. Louis Dam Road, and elsewhere. So.
But you would be able to pass a moratorium in the Hall building, you know, right?
Well, let me just go to that.
Okay.
When I get to that point.
Holy.
Anyway, so what you have is the table that lists the current applications as of July 1st, 2006. And it's divided in by application type. So working your way across the table, you have application type, there's a county file number, there's a brief description of the project, the number of units or size of the project, location, street address, location, and the status. And this is coming from the planner who's working on the application as to where things stand. So for example, it starts off with major subdivisions, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 major subdivisions in application at the county right now. And they're in various stages of either being incomplete or complete status. Let me explain what complete and incomplete means, because that's critical. When we receive an application, we have 30 days to view an application as to its completeness. And that means that has the applicant submitted all the material that's required under the subdivision ordinance and other requirements of the county. And if they have not, I'm going to issue a letter to them indicating that there's more material required to support their application. We cannot begin the process of environmental review on that application until all of that material is submitted to the county. When we do deem it complete, then the obligation is to start the environmental review. And depending on the extent of the environmental review, it could be an initial study, which is a determination that has no impact, it's a negative declaration, or if it's a mitigated negative declaration, there is impact, but those can be mitigated. Or there could be a determination that an environmental impact report is required. So it's a key step for the applicant and for the county to understand, do we have all the material that's necessary to review the application? And you'll see on some of these subdivisions and also on the minor subdivisions, a lot of them are in stages of incompleteness because the applicant hasn't supplied the material that's necessary to review the project. So that's important to understand, and some of these actually go back a couple of years. They've been hanging around for a while, right? And it's the obligation of the applicant to submit that material. We cannot generate it for them. So these are a listing of projects. We've also listed on here development plans and land use permits, and those cover things such as, so you'll see a couple of examples where it's, a lot of people would be the Sikh temple expansion. That requires a land use permit, and that was something that was submitted back in 2003, and it looks to be completed according to the planner who's been reviewing it. We also list on here the general plan amendment. These are the privately initiated general plan amendments, and we have one that's been authorized by the board and one that is pending consideration by the board for authorization. Now, authorization just means that the board agrees that the state should move forward and they're reserving their judgment as to whether they're going to approve that general plan. So that's the current list of projects according to what I've been able to track down. Just to explain this, the county is investing in a more sophisticated permit tracking system. And so we're hopeful that once that software package is completely installed and is up and running, we can generate these kinds of lists more quickly. It's actually quite cumbersome. I have to go back through several project lists and track down the planner to find out what's happening. It takes a couple of days to get that all done. So that's what's before the county right now. The second thing that I provided you is the memo, which is the explanation of what is required under law to impose a development moratorium. And fundamentally, Government Code Section 65858 provides the statutory authority for what's called an interim ordinance. It's also called a moratorium. So that prohibits uses that may conflict with contemplated general plan, specific plan, or zoning proposals that a local jurisdiction is studying or plans to study. And it imposes temporary land use controls based on a documented current and immediate threat to public health, safety, and welfare. The interim ordinance protects and promotes the planning process by prohibiting the introduction of potentially non-conforming land uses that could defeat or impair the later adopted general plan or zoning ordinance. Procedurally, the ordinance may be adopted initially with or without a public hearing following a forfeit. So that means that in the case of the board, you have to have four members of the board agreeing to impose the moratorium. The initial moratorium cannot last more than 45 days, and then after that, during that 45-day period, there could be a decision to extend the moratorium. That again requires another four-fifths vote. It can be extended for 10 months and 15 days. Thereafter, an ordinance be extended for an additional 1 year. You can't have go two extensions of a moratorium. So you're out probably 22 months, roughly speaking, if you close the moratorium. And then something that's very important to understand is the legislative body, in this case the Board of Supervisors, cannot adopt or extend any interim ordinance unless the ordinance contains a finding that there is a current and immediate threat to public health, safety, and welfare, and then 10 days prior to the expiration of such an ordinance or any extension of written reports to be issued describing the measures taken to alleviate the condition that led to the adoption. I've attached the actual section from the California Government Code, and I've highlighted the key provisions that are important to bear in mind. And so with that, you'll see where I've highlighted under bold type and underline the four-fifths requirement, the length of an interim ordinance, and then the finding that about legislative body that they have to firmly define that there's a definite threat. And then finally, a new provision that was added in 2001 relates to multifamily residential projects. The state legislature determined that since it's imperative to deal with the housing crisis in California, they wanted to protect projects that involve multifamily housing, and so there are additional procedures by which you have to follow if you're going to impose a moratorium that may affect proposals for multifamily development. So that's what the law provides for. And so if there is to be consideration of a moratorium, You can be specific as to a geographic area. You can limit it to a certain area. You can do that in the findings or in the adoption of the interim ordinance. Or you can be very broad in terms of covering certain kinds of land uses. However, having said that, for example, the moratorium on cannabis clubs is an example. We had a broad moratorium countywide on establishment of cannabis clubs. It was focused on specific use, but you can target it to a specific geographic area. But it's very, very important to understand that you must have supportable findings, and there must be evidence in the record to support those findings. So if you are challenged as to the legality of the imposition of the development moratorium, you have to have your record very clear that there is an imminent threat to public health, public health and safety or wellness.
One is, I don't know if you have experience, but ordinarily then with this proposal to address the moratorium, be presented by a lawyer representing a body such as ours, or, I mean, I guess we would present it to the supervisor and he would do it, but I'm just wondering if there's legal representation generally involved in this kind of thing, A, and then B, when it says public health, safety, or welfare, those seem like those are legal terms and that they must be defined what the burden of proof is to meet those standards.
Well, if the board initiates a proposal for a moratorium, our legal counsel is county counsel. And one of the functions of county counsel is to assist in the drafting of ordinances to make sure that we follow all the correct requirements of the law. And in doing that, they insist upon having the record very clear as to the reasons, the rationale for establishing, for this, in this case, a moratorium. So let's say, so this is my part of community development. Okay, there's this proposal. Where is in the record that you can show me, clearly show me that it can stand up in a court case that shows that there is an imminent threat here? And they're going to, my experience with county council is they're very conservative in their advice to the board, and they're not going to want to go on anything that's paper thin. They're going to want to have substantial evidence.
So, when you say substantial evidence, I mean, it's kind of hard to document problems that have not yet occurred, but one could make a case that until there are improvements to the roadway, increasing traffic on this road by developing business or additional housing could be a public safety issue. But absent a history of problems, it's hard to document that they happen.
And that's the dilemma that you have. And that's the way the laws are written. The burden is on that jurisdiction and the government by imposing a moratorium to have the facts supporting it. Because otherwise, rightfully so, a development interest or a landowner can say, look, this is arbitrary, it's capricious, there's nothing supporting this. And it's to protect their property rights. The other thing I think is not so much a property rights question, but more of a kind of a policy question and also an economic development question. On the one hand, you know, it sends kind of a conflicting message, a mixed signal to private capital or to developers. On the one hand, you're saying, we want you to come to El Sobrante to help revitalize this area. But on the other hand, we want to impose a moratorium because we don't like certain kinds of uses or we're concerned about certain kinds of development that we could commit. And so that's something that many jurisdictions have had to weigh as to, you know, what is your objective here?
Are there intermediary steps outside of a moratorium that could be put in place that may help? I mean, for example, if I don't know how it works at your department, but when someone's thinking about a project and they're in the beginning stages, if they were to meet with a planner and the planner were to let them know, you know, if there were anything on file that says where it's going?
Well, let me describe the process that actually the owner has participated in a couple of times. We do something called pre-application. And we do that when we know a project is out there and it's under consideration. And we know that there could be issues or the development concept is so sketchy or it's on a location that we know that there could be some issues. But we steer them toward the pre-application review. And the purpose is to surface all the issues that may come up with somebody who may formally submit an application and get it out there for discussion. it's served held without prejudice. It's not, you know, it's for the applicant's benefit because they begin to understand what they may be getting themselves into if they wanted to formally file an application. It also enables the community to understand what that person is thinking about doing. So we do that in many cases when we either have a development concept where we're just not sure about either the use or the location. We steer them in that direction. Or when we quite frankly think, you know, it's a pretty sensitive area and we try to encourage them to think about doing that. We've heard feedback from development interests that they like that because the last thing they want to do is spend a lot of money and waste a lot of time on something that's never going to get approved, or it's just going to keep them years tied up. They prefer to know, okay, have I got any chance at all? So they really, we get very positive feedback on that. The only thing that is, I guess, sort of negative about it is that it only gives you a snapshot, and so it doesn't go into the level of details you typically find with a true application. But at least it gets the matter surfaced, and I think we have in a couple of cases succeeded in through the pre-application review process of redirecting people. In other words, you know, telling them, look, you're facing a mountain of problems if you want to go the path that you want to go on, and here's an alternative path that you may want to think about. So I think for certain kinds of projects, it's really benefited both of us.
Yeah. So is that the kind of thing that could, I mean, if we get further along with this, and it's looking like there'll be time left,
well,
that,
I think, you know it seems like, from what I can gather from the list of projects coming in our community, the other thing is you have to remember, part of this is market-driven. We're probably heading into a down period on the market because of the interest rates, and so the hot, heavy demand for certain kinds of residential is ebbing right now. And so I think things are going to cool down a little bit. We won't be under the kind of pressure we were last year or the year before. So we're not seeing as much interest in terms of change to land use right now. We've got a real person looking at that piece over on Duke Costage's property on St. Pebble Dam Road, which I think could provide some benefits to the community if that were the case. And then we have the one further down on St. Papazana Road, which is not in the area that we're looking at. And I don't know where they're at. They seem to be going very slowly. So that's one indicator to me that, you know, there's an opportunity here. It doesn't seem like the pent-up demand is there right now for just trying to find any spot you can in the Bay Area to build a house.
Right.
The other thing that to bear in mind is that and we've had this discussion, I've had this discussion with several of you, is that, for example, auto repair businesses. We know that there's elements of the community that are concerned about their location on Appian Way or on San Pablo. But so long as the general plan and the zoning support that use, and it is typically through a maintenance permit process, we cannot turn them around and say, you know, don't come through our door and apply. They have a right. And so we have to respect their rights. But, you know, there are cases where the one in particular, the application was denied. The land use permit was denied. So I don't know that we're in a situation right now where the moratorium may be the answer for it.
Right.
There could be some problems with it in terms of establishing the legal basis. And the second issue is what kind of message does that send? Is that the message you want to send out to the private capital and development interests?
So just one other thing that I'll stop. But, you know, like I'm looking at this, there are a couple major subdivisions on Appian Way. We have a couple that have been built or are in the process of being built recently. And, I mean, things like setbacks and, you know, where the backyards are placed and all these things that have been discussed in terms of the general plan amendments and are not being built the way that it would have been changed.
True.
How can we stop these from following that same course?
Well, you know, one possible way is pursue voluntary variances in the case of certain developments where, you know, the developer is volunteering to make a request for variance to change the setback requirement or incorporate elements that you think are desirable. It depends on the developer, of course. Some are very open and broad-minded about that. Others are, you know, they've got a very fixed idea of what they want to develop, and they're going to do it. That's the way they want to do it. that's the only thing I think short of imposing a moratorium is to work in a voluntary fashion to encourage them to pursue that. I know that many applicants have been coming to the MAC and also the P&Z, getting input, and that's your opportunity, obviously, is to explain to them you've got this desire to create a different kind of development pattern, and could you please look at that, incorporating that into your design to be formally adopt these recommendations.
I know at the last meeting I heard Susan mention this moratorium, my ears perked up, because obviously everyone here has at some point or other talked to somebody about it, and this letter would never have been written unless there was a lot of push to see possibly this happen. And I just want to say this is one of the reasons elected members might be good. I have an opposing opinion. I believe in private property rights, and to establish a moratorium on development on the possibility or the probability of a general plan change, it's just amazing to me that you would do that. I like diversity in land use, not just in the political arena. I think diversity in land use is what gives Elsa Branding its particular charm, and when you try to assimilate lots, promote uniformity along 18 Way or Dam Road, I think that's a real problem. And I am opposed to a moratorium, and I really hope that doesn't get off the ground.
Thank you.
What's the time lapse between when a general plan amendment is approved and then the actual changes to the zoning code are implemented?
Well, as we talked about, what we typically do when a mixed-use designation is created in the county, we follow on with the establishment of a P1 Land Unit Development Zoning District. As I've talked about in the past, what a P1 does is it's a zoning district that's tailored to that geographic area. So you set the standards, you set the regulations, you set through that zoning the uses that are allowed by right, the uses that are discouraged, or uses that require a use permit. And so until that gets in place, it's the implementation of the general plan policy that we're keeping to bear in mind here. So the experience has been it follows after the general plan. There is a possibility of moving that along, but you really need to have a policy basis before you can set the general that zoning district in place.
So the packet that you provided us, the color section by section along the project, that would be an example of moving towards a P1 district designation in terms of the lot by lot. You would sort of provided what your proposed changes.
Yeah, what you would do in the change to the general plan, or let's say Appian, you start identifying, are there sections of Appian Way where you think it's inappropriate to have, let's say, auto repair businesses or commercial services. I noticed somebody's got an El Sabrante sewer repair working out of a house. If that kind of thing, if that's the thing that you're aiming at, but you could start to identify blocks where you think it's appropriate for certain kinds of uses you want to encourage, and those uses that you want to discourage. And then you can follow on with the rezoning, which says, okay, this zoning district says you can do this, you can do this through a use permit, conditional use, no, you can't do this, it's not allowed. And so, but you have to set the course for that in the general plan.
So that's the type of input you're looking
for? Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I think the experience with the auto repair business for the Appian Way is an illustration of where we need to hear from the community. Is this really something that, you don't want to encourage that kind of use in those locations? Is there a place that you want to aim or direct them toward? A location you think is more appropriate for that? Those are the kinds of things we need to hear.
Okay, one more question, sorry. So in the packet, you provided a list of the current zoning, whether it's single family or apartments, office, residential, whatever. And then there was another column of where the proposed changes would be, which lots would be proposed mixed use. Can you just explain what your thinking was in terms of how you chose those particular lots?
Well, there are certain locations that would be my recommendation. that you do not want to make a change to land use designation. It's described before where you have a church or an institute and you use it. Seems like those are fixed uses. They're going to stay there. They've made an investment to be there, and they're not going to go away. Where you have an existing apartment building, again, those are probably going to stay. Where you have locations where the lot pattern is kind of, well, there's many illustrations of that in that way, where it's linear, and it's very hard to develop those properties. Those are locations where, you know, you have an old house, maybe that's the appropriate location to encourage the mixed-use designation. So I identified those by each block where I thought it was possible to encourage that kind of development pattern. You know, there are obviously cases on Appian Way where you actually have an application that has been approved, that they're building now. Obviously, you can't change that.
And then, how are you deciding? There have been certain developers or applicants who have made presentations here. Are you deciding which ones that you suggest come before us? Is it the size or the scale, or?
We leave it up to them. It's strictly up to them if they want to go. When we hear that there's an application that we know from past experience could be controversial, we say, look, save yourself a lot of time. Go talk to the MAC. Explain to them what you want to do and get your input. Because sure enough, if they don't like it, they're going to show up to the public hearing and tell the planning commission, maybe the board, if you want to save yourself, we call it the brain damage, you know, go talk to the MAC before you get too serious. Well, can you or any group in Hills Bronte for that matter?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, my question is really about related to the actual responses, and that is we just reviewed the minutes from our land use planning group that has a number of specific thoughts, questions, and recommendations relative to the general plan. I'm wondering what it takes from our body to authorize those questions and responses to be asked of Patrick. I mean, do we need to somehow authorize a meeting between representatives of our land use planning and Patrick to go over the specific points?
That's what we were planning on doing.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions?
Yes,
First, I'd like to make a comment. I would like to recognize Patrick and thank him personally because I know you've been working on this since 1997.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. And you have shown a great deal of patience with this community. And I personally want to thank you for that. I'm not sure how many people I've been around this room, and I can say that probably not too many people are aware of that stuff in this room. And there sure are even fewer people in the community that feel like that. So, thank you very much. Could you just briefly, this is a rather broad question, I know, but could you talk a little bit about the process of the general plan? What the county versus the municipality?
Sure. Well, there's really not too much difference between a county or a city in terms of what they have to do with general plan. Each jurisdiction, city or county, is required to have a general plan. You must have seven elements in that general plan. They're mandated by law. Land use element is one example. The city has to follow the same process that the county follows in terms of adoption. You must have a hearing before the planning commission. The planning commission must forward recommendations to legislative body. In our case, it's the board of supervisors and the gate of the city and the city council. So we all have to follow the same process. We're also limited to amendments in the general plan to 4 a year. It's a mandatory element to the general plan if you're changing because it can only be done 4 times a year. We're all required to have a housing element. And we're obligated under the housing element law to identify sites that can support housing, and in fact, the law keeps changing on the housing element, but increasingly the state legislature is directing that we need to do more planning for providing a full range of housing, particularly affordable housing. And so every jurisdiction has got that responsibility.
Just one little follow-up for Mr. Harvey. She's real kind. Municipalities got a little more flexibility in working more detail into the congestion plan than what the county did.
Well, the difference, I think, is our general plan covers the entire county. So it's a document that covers everything from North Richmond, El Sobrante, all the way up to Byron. Yeah, so it's got a lot of area to cover. The other thing that may be distinctive in our general plan is we deal more with natural resources, conservation issues, things related to farmland protection, watershed protection. The city of San Pablo is not going to have those issues, farmland protection or protecting watershed. So those issues are not going to be typically found in our general. So we have a little bit more dealing with protection of the resources of the county.
So those issues have a much broader impact on land use.
They do in the more rural parts of the county, we have very specific policies that we have to follow, and they're incorporated into the general plan. They do not apply to urbanized, unincorporated areas.
What are
those
seven elements?
Well,
you mentioned land use.
Sure, right. See if I can get them all down.
Yeah, here we go.
You have land use. You have the circulation or transportation circulation element, the housing element.
Can you wait in the circulation housing?
Housing. We have to have a safety element.
Safety element.
An open space element, which we combine into our conservation element. Is that fine? Well, that's not, you have some flexibility there. I mentioned safety element. Mm-hmm. It's kind of in another. If I had my general plan here, I could but there are seven mandatory elements.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's very good. I agree. If there are no other questions, we really want to thank you for coming. And if I realized you were going to come, I would have put you on earlier if I didn't realize you were going to be here. Huh? But coming this late, I really appreciate it.
There is one more thing I need to ask, get direction on, actually, or some guidance on. At the last meeting, I presented the material for the land use scenarios, and there was a discussion about, aiming for a town hall public forum type meeting in October. What I need to know is, before I direct the traffic consultant to start doing the analysis, I need to know if the numbers that I presented to you last month are close, because once I tell them to start the analysis, that starts the whole ball rolling in terms of the traffic modeling, and it gets very expensive. So I need to know, am I getting close, or am I still too far? Those were in the total number of units, total amount of commercial square footage. There was a fairly healthy reduction from what was shown in the draft EIR from March of 2003. So. Let me back up. Ultimately, if we're going to move forward, we need to complete that environmental review. And a key feature of the environmental review, that environmental impact report, is traffic analysis. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive to run the traffic model. And to be efficient, we need to make sure that what we tell them go do the analysis on is the right set of numbers, because otherwise we could spend a lot of money and a lot of time and everyone would be frustrated.
I understand that. But you're saying those models on those numbers, there's not going to be any traffic study done of actual assessment of what the current use is on the road. I ask that because our summertime use elsewhere in the area is so different.
No. It doesn't affect traffic counts. No. It's actually, the development potential that you're asking the traffic model to calculate in terms of what is its impact on the transportation
method. This is the page that compares the draft EIR of dwelling units 1110, commercial square feet 572, 750, reduced dwelling units 605, 332, 655. And so you're asking us if we go along with this potential revised
draft? You don't have to go along with it. I just need to know that if I'm at direct or traffic consultant to go do analysis, that number is the number that you think is in the range. You don't just need to agree with it.
In other words, if we go along.
I have to have numbers for them to start analysis on.
Okay. I think in our next meeting, our land use committee meeting, we will be going over that.
We were actually going to go walk
the entire length of the ATM and the flush period and kind of start trying to get a handle.
Okay.
What we did is we actually went through each, what are they called?
Block.
Each block. And we just highlighted the exact lots that you proposed to the mixed use change. So we could actually just visually start getting a sense of what does that look like, what would that mean. But I think we wanted to actually go walk and take a look at the different
things. Well, we have some questions for you.
Okay. Well, what would be helpful for me, so I can direct our consultant, is that if you're aiming for a fall town hall meeting, and presumably you want to have those results for that town hall meeting, we're looking at trying to reserve time in August for them to do that analysis. So I'm not trying to put pressure on you, but it would be nice to know sooner than later. We're in reasonable range so that they can start that analysis.
So maybe by
how are they going to be determining the range? I'm not sure what you're talking about.
When they do the traffic analysis, they need to have the amount of number of units.
I hear that, but I mean, how are these people going to be asked to determine the range? They may decide they don't want as much. Is that what you're looking in for?
Whether they don't want
that many units?
We bring that back to the council.
Okay.
So just, I'm just thinking, because what we have done in the subcommittee is really go through all the materials you've been presenting and kind of go line by line, kind of figure out where we have questions. And I just think that it would be good if all the council members do that before the next meeting and really pour through the materials, because the subcommittee will go and do a walk. But it sounds like, I mean, that we're already pushing it for you if we don't have that answer for you until our next meeting in August, and that we won't have a lot of time if we do want to have a fall meeting. For other council members, if everybody isn't kind of already at the same level of information, to have discussion at the August meeting and lead it into, you know, trying to decide in September, then we will not be able to do this meeting until November, which is going to be bad for holidays. So it sounds like, you know, that there's critical timing issues and that we should really try to all move forward and review the information.
You know, from past experience that when we start getting into the modeling, something's always going to be a glitch, there's always going to be a problem, it's going to be harder than we think it is, and so it would be nice to know what we're aiming at.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good. Well, it's kind of a chicken or the egg question, because yes, the number of units is reduced from the initial proposal, and yet part of our questions when we're meeting is, it really depends on what the impacts are, and yet we're needing to come up with a number in order to. Right. So I can tell you just from our first pass, it seemed like there were a considerable amount of either vacant lots or single family units that were then proposed to be changed to a 1220. Yeah, it just seems, just sort of at a first pass, at a glance, it seems like it would be a significant increase.
Clearly you're adding units. There's no question. So you're going to have that impact on the system.
And the other question, I'm sorry, the other question I have for you, because, you know, we've been through once with, you know, the traffic is not acceptable. And, I mean, do you have any sense of how much of a traffic reduction we're talking? Because I would hate to run this and find that the traffic is still really unacceptable, and then where would we be? Or how would that work?
All I can say is that you'll see there was a significant reduction in units.
Mm-hmm.
I took a lot off Dam Road, mm-hmm. took a fair number off the Valley, and then reduced the amount of commercial square footage. My assessment or judgment is on commercial square footage, I forgot what the exact number is, about 300,000 to 400,000 per acre, something like that. That's what we put from the 3 neighborhood shopping centers. I think that's really quality of support anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Units, you know, that can go down. But what I caution on that is, leave yourself some pushback or some room for flexibility. There may be something in the future that you really want to encourage. And if you have reduced the development potential so low in terms of the analysis for the EIR, you have to start that over again. So there's some advantage in just looking at, okay, this is where we think the upper ceiling or upper range is going to be, and do that analysis, and then you can work down.
Okay,
Are these 605 dwelling units, is that in addition to what is already being developed? Or is that including what's already being
developed? Those would be new units that were as a result.
In addition?
Yes.
Whoa, that's going to be a lot of people. So that's just in addition to what's already out there, which is a lot.
Everything that's built before it didn't exist.
Okay. So we're talking 15
lots.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to ask you for your professional perspective, because part of our reason for going out to APN and really taking a look at, you know, what exactly are the land uses was driven by wondering whether there might be certain blocks that might lend themselves more to having the more mixed use, as opposed to sort of having it spread out all along APN. And so I'm just wondering if you've already sort of taken that into account.
I did a little bit of that already. I did look, you'll see the block where you have, where there's a significant number of institutional uses, like the Boys and Girls Club,
right.
Salvation Army building. That seems to be an area where you're going to have more civic uses, and so you're not going to have necessarily mixed use there. Further up the block, like I'm happy where you'll see the lot pattern is linear, and it certainly seems, if you're going to do something, that seems to be an area where you could use something. Create a development pattern where you consolidate the lots. That could be an opportunity. And maybe that's where you really want to have more residential-based development. And then focus maybe at the nodes for more commercial activity, like the triangle as a node for commercial. And then obviously, St. Pelican Road would be commercial. But just for EIR purposes, giving yourself kind of that room to work with is pretty important. Because otherwise, you kind of
block yourself. Just exactly on that point, because we also know that once something is zoned to be able to build a certain use, that it's hard to stop somebody. So how do you balance that? You want to give yourself room, but at the same time, if it's an area where right now you really don't think it would fit, is it still better to err on the side and have the landowner then, you know, do a general plan amendment on their own later?
Well,
or how does that balance?
Part of what I described before was, in land use policy, what you want to do is you want to broadly define the uses you want to encourage, uses that you want to discourage. And then you come back with the zoning district that gets established, that specialized zoning district. It says, these are the uses that we're going to allow, these are the uses that we don't allow for use permit, these are the uses you don't want, cannot allow on the market.
Right. So, but is that the same for, like, this is okay to build mixed use versus this is okay for commercial only?
Oh,
or, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Like, well, remember what our way we establish our mixed use designation in the county is it encourages, it doesn't require, and so it's still up to the landowner to make that choice.
Right.
Do they want to mix commercial and residential together?
Right. But if we feel like now it wouldn't fit well to be necessarily mixed use, but you're, like you said, maybe in the future, you may be someone, maybe it would later.
Right.
How do we make that judgment
now?
Well,
not in our general plan, but I've seen where there are trigger points in the future where you consider certain actions based on, you know, threshold that's been reached. I don't know if it'll work here, but it's possible.
Okay.
I think we're going to close it off now. Karen, do you have a question?
Given that it takes several months in order to have a good, well-organized town hall meeting, should we hold off until the next month for me to ask if there is a subcommittee that wants to be formed?
Well, we've got a subcommittee going.
We think it's going to come.
Oh, you mean that one? Oh, yeah.
So to divvy up all the great work that we have to do in order to get the word out and do some of the kind of outreach and everything, or should we start now, and if there are people who are interested, then I can maybe try to do a formal meeting and kind of first get a timeline going and get a scale of what all we need to do in order to get everything organized.
I think we'll have to put it on the agenda.
Okay. That means it's in July, we'll just have August.
Yeah.
Good. That means we'll have 30 days left to.
30 days left.
And that's, I mean, given all of our busy schedule, I'm just really, I just kind of want to put out there that coming on a meeting date for 5 different people, that's not as easy as we are on my presentation.
Well, you know, if you think that based on this discussion, it's okay to do this
I mean, I think there are things that we can do initially, things like just identifying, you know, if there are neighborhoods that we need to, you know, finding if the location occurs, figuring out a time, giving us some of the duties, like, you know, if there's a talking point that we all want to try to follow, or just kind of things like that, you know, who's going to kind of do what work.
The last time you had, when you had the charrettes and that kind of stuff, you had it up in the Masonic Hall, this will not be that kind of thing?
It's going to be whatever the MAC would like for it to be. So it's really, you know, our office is here to help facilitate that. So, you know, I don't know anything about charrettes. It didn't come through, I mean, you know, it wasn't something that our office.
So since it's not part of the redevelopment thing, since it's just a general plan change, it's up to the MAC to organize the
areas on it? Well, it's for the existence of the MAC community development in our office.
Yeah.
So it's more of a town hall meeting, we have a panel and discussions. I mean, that's all up for discussion. I mean, something as intense as a charrette, I don't think it's going to happen. That makes me, you know,
no, that's not what I meant. I meant as far as organizing it. It was all done outside of the MAC, and we just went.
Well,
but this time, it sounds like the county is not going to organize this. It's going to be up to the MAC.
No, the county is organizing it,
but
we
can't
do it without the assistance of the MAC.
Oh, okay. I'm just wanting to get a sense of what your expectation is for this public hearing. Are you expecting that this may be the first time community members may have heard about it and you're going to receive feedback and then incorporate that feedback, or are you expecting that you want them to?
The town hall meeting, let's be clear, is not my idea necessarily. It's in response to what the supervisor desire is to, before we go into hearings with the planning commission and to the board, he wants to make sure that the community is at least reading from the same page about what it is that will be presented to the planning commission. And so, I guess we're trying to get a sounding of, are we close? Are we too far off? You know, that kind of thing. Before we bring it to the planning commission.
I think in a meeting like this, where there's always kind of complicated issues to have to try to, you know, put our arms around, there's always going to be a learning curve with any community. I mean, we're living and breathing it month to month, but there's going to be residents who, for the first time, this will be their first time. Yeah.
And they're going to yell and scream why they didn't hear about this and why didn't they ask our opinion.
Yes. So we have to be ready for that.
Yeah.
round and round.
I'm perfectly happy to talk about minor structuring things and come back with a proposal. I mean, just to go over things with parents and try to have a structure that we can discuss pros and cons next meeting, that would be helpful. And also, I think it would be important if we could possibly set a date now, if we can, set some meeting for the next meeting we need to set the date. So if it's August to October, that would give us 2 months, would be the bare minimum needed to actually pull a meeting together. So do people think there's any possibility of picking a date in October now, or even
I don't
think we need to pick a date. Right, and so if we pick one now, then our calendars would be filled up between now and the next meeting with things in October.
Well, and in a way, we're clearer
the
now.
The problem is that we've got to get some things back to him, but it didn't even start part of the transition.
Right.
But you can still set that meeting, though.
You can still set a meeting, and that can still happen in the end.
You can go outside, and you can use the board.
My concern about setting a meeting date now is coming here next month and having people disagree about what they think Patrick should perceive.
But we can change the meeting date because it won't be publicized.
Okay, as long as it's not, that's fine if it's not that in public.
A working date that we could all plan around. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, exactly. And let me just have some kind of an end date so that we can work backwards from that.
And then if we're making no progress at the next meeting, we can
that letter.
You're going to change the general plan whether we have a town hall meeting or not.
Yeah,
we
do.
Hey, let's just.
We said, I know. Do you want to set a date now?
Sure, as long as it doesn't go beyond anyone in the room, because I think the worst thing that could be done is that it gets out to the public and canceled and rescheduled again. So I'm fine with setting a date if it doesn't do.
Yep, okay. And you put your calendar out.
If it can go out, then just tell whoever.
Oh, yeah, I just mean, like, it's not going to get to the public right now that we're having this.
I'm in the stall and I'm in the
other. Oh, actually, that's a doctor. Terrible for me. Huh?
Later again?
Better,
if not?
Yes.
Thanksgiving week.
October 9th.
Christmas week?
We want it on what day of the week do we want?
So why don't we do kind of general, you know, is it like at the end of the day, is it on the weekend, is it a weekday, beginning of the week, end of the week, that way it'll just kind of give us a little bit of, you know, flavor of it, finding it. And we can come back with, you know, these are some of the dates.
You know, I think this is an important issue for the community, and I actually think if it would be amenable, and I hate to even ask you this, but to the county staff, that it would actually make the most sense to have a couple of meetings, sort of like the charrettes were open for people to come, and I think some people can't come during the week, I think some people can't come on weekends, and that it should be made available to people, so I would almost suggest having two. And having a less formal, maybe have a small presentation, maybe have, you know, your pictures up on the wall, let people walk around, let people talk, let, you know, and then reconvene and have a question and answer, rather than having a huge one time only where people just feel like everything has to pour out, you know, and they just figured it out. So making something like an open exhibit followed by a couple of meetings.
So, how about a Thursday evening and a Saturday morning?
Thursday evening and Saturday morning? Does that sound good to everybody?
For 2 hours, 2 hours to write an out of time?
Yeah,
Oh, yeah, football during the winter. That would be good.
Okay. So is that a critical moment in this moment?
I don't know these things. Okay, so I would suggest either we'll look into the football thing Wednesday or Thursday, the 25th or 26th, or Saturday, 28th.
Is that the third Thursday? Our line was meeting third Thursday.
What's that?
Actually, the fourth Thursday.
Earlier, I asked the next week before.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, we don't want it on a PNC meeting either, which is
not
very
easy.
Yeah. It would be all right to that
second Thursday.
Okay.
Okay, so that would be October. We'll be looking at the dates of the 25th or 26th, checking football.
25th, 26th,
and then Saturday, the 28th.
I'm just going to say now I'm not available Saturday the 28th, but I don't want that to scare anything. I'm just not, I can't do it.
You got to be there. You got to be there.
So Thursday I can do.
Okay. So if we're agreeable, yes.
I was just going to say the other thing you need to take into account is you may want to have it in your school, and school will not be open until late August. So check the calendar.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Okay,
so we're going to set it up in for the 25th in the afternoon and we'll start in the morning. And we're going to, Susan has volunteered to work with
Could you handle the Boys and Girls Club? I mean, if you can, that's a much easier place to get in than the other.
They can explore those sites.
Oh,
and thank you very much for coming.
While I'm here, I have one more thing.
Oh, okay.
Just to let you know, we did submit comments on Floor screen project?
Yes, very good.
And then the flood control department's comments on the San Pablo Reservoir.
And they were both included in the
Thank you so much, especially for coming out so late.
Okay, let's go on. Report on Elk Branding Act 2019 and vote.
Well, I think it was a good idea because I think that's a really good idea as to who does what and why they do it. And I'm so glad we got together and had that meeting so that we came away, I think, feeling good about knowing what everything was doing.
Susan, did you have something you wanted to
say? No, I was looking forward to Tom because Tom took minutes that night and I was.
I think we discussed all of these through an actual list element in the spark study. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm supervisor Joy, I'm going to make sure that anybody here gets a copy of it. Okay, and can I agree with you, anybody else have any concerns? Development plan application for reports for the modification of the
Can I? You had a letter in here. Is that included in this, or a letter as a member of the planning and zoning in here? But I'm not sure where that went.
That's in the planning and zoning. Material.
Okay. At what point can I want to ask about that and also about the Spanish Trails. Is that now or later when
that
I come
back to
the...
That would be later.
Okay.
Thank you for coming, Michelle. So if there's nothing, your comments on the material that you included, we're going to talk about that spring cleanup date.
I think Derek and I were volunteers. We volunteered to coordinate cleanup events. They picked the that came to mind. That's the one that happened. And our limited conversation on it has involved, you know, if we can get a committee that comes to the health, so we need to outline what actually we're going to do, but it will be some time after the school, and then we'll come in the other office. So, that's enough for my update at this point.
Yes. And I'm just curious, are there any MAC members that would be interested in helping with the cleanup day? Marilyn, do you want to help? Think about it, plan, coordinate.
What do you do?
Well, we're gonna.
I got involved one time and got fired. I would say that right off the bat, I got fired.
Oh, well, we wouldn't fire you.
And it was really weird. I have no idea why I got fired, but I did.
I mean, we're just going to pull together a community, a broad-based group of people. It doesn't necessarily have to be just MAC members to set the dates, to get the dumpsters.
I'd be glad to help out.
There was that gentleman who donated the t-shirt. So
I have all that material for you.
So that's the event with the Boys and Girls Club,
right? Yeah. Well, they have other shoes there. Like, what we work very closely with is Elizabeth Alcalades. Yeah. And she has a sign.
To my knowledge, Elk Branding, there's three dumpsters, and nobody else comes out. Cleanup day is September, and it's Saturday, September, but the spawners typically have the creekside cleanup. And that's really publicized because the state puts money into this. So I'm just wondering if it might be a good thing to double up, have an Elk Branding cleanup day at the same time that there is a coastal cleanup day, so that you get the word out, and then you just use all the dumpsters for that. Bonner is not from that. All right, that's his work. I don't think he's done. Four. Yeah, I can find out. It's in September. And I think it might be at around the same time that was rolled. But, you know, I mean, if you really, I think the last time there was a cleanup day, the, although we thought that it was successful, lots of residents in the community thought that they weren't notified well enough for it.
Exactly.
And so you kind of have to battle with that a little bit.
Yes.
Two comments. One is, I know that was a problem. The other thing is that those dumpsters were filled early last year with poor community awareness. I'm concerned about that issue, that if you really get it out there, I can't imagine three dumpsters would be enough. But then the other thing is, if you choose a date that is not September, I would be really concerned about pulling together this big town hall series of meetings in October and having people planning a cleanup, and I would feel like this town hall meeting and dealing with this general plan amendment would take priority. And I'm worried that people's time would be feeling really constrained if both activities were taking place in October. So I put that out there for everybody to think about. But that would be my concern. I think that we should devote a lot of time and outreach to these meetings.
And I served as a stroll and kind of cleanup also. I mean, I'm involved in that also. But I mean, in terms of those of us working on these things, there's our time and also the trouble to try all three things.
Well, we can certainly talk about it from one step.
So are we thinking about when she asked me?
Is there any carryover? Like, I think there's no carryover of the dumpsters. So if we did it this thing, we can have six.
We can use it or lose it. It's like vacation.
Yeah.
So we have three, you said, Karen?
Yeah.
Six in the spring.
We have eight. Well, see, the youth chamber told me that we have only two.
We have two or three.
Chamber went to RMS. They didn't go through us. Okay. So all the requests in order. The chamber got the dedication of the box themselves through RMS, and RMS didn't come to us to get that authorization that they could use one or three. So
we've got three numbers?
We've got three.
And they're the large ones?
They're the large ones.
Okay. Three large ones.
But Bonner's might be smaller too, or?
Well, I mean, that's the same.
Yeah, I mean,
not one or two, because that wouldn't leave anything for her. As far as isn't exactly wanting to do that at the same time, but we'll talk about that. Okay, let's go on to Tom's down here for the report. Let me make a comment. At the board meeting at the Chamber of Commerce, they waived the fee. So I have the application. All we have to do is implement it. So do you want me to go ahead and send it in your name and contact?
Sure.
Okay, I'll do that.
This is a fee for entering the El Sobrany Stroll for the MAC?
Right. They waived the fee.
How much is that fee usually?
$5. I think it was $50 for another car.
And so, this is a lot of long events, which,
not much for you.
Are you the chair of the stroll?
Well, I'm not the chair of the stroll, but as a concept for a booth, hopefully the stroll will like that. In a bottle, an interactive game with the public, sort of an educational game where you have a spinning wheel. I'm not sure, I couldn't find what I've rented in the past, so if somebody wants to have one or knows one, or we can create a bicycle fire or we can do it at the drawing, but where people come up and fill out a card so we can start mailing lists if we need it to inform people of all the mysteries we have going on. And by doing that, then they can spin the wheel and it'll land on something and they can answer questions. It'll be an education question either about the history of El Sobrany, the competition notice, the purpose of the MAC, or if we do it with the R&I, it'll be about that. But we would staff it so we getting to know that there's a command to do with the R&I, and to have displays and accomplishments, that kind of thing. But if they get the question, they have to write it, and put their card in for going for a free dinner or a free something else that communicates. Anyone who claims to get a balloon with a website or a slogan or a date for a public meeting or something else on it. And any, you know, we could have quick questions for kids also. I just find that people love free stuff. And I costed it out, we could do it for under $200, not for displays and that kind of thing, but the balloons and doing a drawing and that kind of thing. So that's my idea. It's really, as you can tell, very worked out. So you can either reject it, accept it, or part of it. But I would, you know, we just need to schedule staffing and then I could get help.
I really like the idea of announcing the general plan. It'd be nice if you make some pertinent things about it on there about, you know, this is how many people might be coming in and this is what we're going to do. I know you don't want to get too out there with it, but to let people know and solicit their input, because you've got a perfect opportunity prior to the town hall meeting to have people just wandering by that are Elsbrenny and Richmond Valley residents and to ask them, how do you feel about what's some very likely, I mean, tell them that the general plan is mandated by law and this is what is probably going to happen. How do you feel about that? You know, you have a perfect opportunity to do this.
Hey, I want to move that we accept Susan's proposal and that we seek donations before confirming spending the math night, but can we move forward?
I want to comment on the spending of the money. This is given to us by the Chamber of Commerce, and they've just given us $300 in addition to what we have. I'm not sure that they would be very happy about us spending funds for this. I asked the funds for postage, for copying, and this sort of thing is what I presented to the board of the chamber. So I would agree if you can raise the donation for the funds, fine. Yes.
Going back to that, don't forget you're supposed to fill out the form to ask if we can take $300 and I'm happy to report back to the
or not, if that would be acceptable, then sharing the cost would be under $100 each and each for the fundraiser for that or whatever.
If we fundraise for it, that would be fine.
I don't think the R9 money can be spent in this way because it's restricted. So, but I think we can certainly, you know, if everyone put in $5 or $10, we would have the money. So I think it's important to proceed and we should be willing to send out an email to people asking them if they'd be willing to pitch in any money.
Sure. I mean, I think it is just how expensive we look at it. Promoting participation, community participation in the general plan and other things, but I'm also willing to ask people to make donations.
And it could be also different questions to the chamber saying yes to. We still need $100 of the dollars. Can we use the money?
Yes.
Well, back to financing now.
Yeah.
No.
If you do fundraising, you have to
do
one of those forms. An easier way to get around that, because if you're asking folks for $5 to $10, is to have either
the community foundation,
right? The community foundation to take that money, That way you don't have to go through all the process of the county stuff. So, that might be an easier process to do that.
So could,
it is an easier process.
Could the foundation take the donation from the chamber? Could the foundation receive that money?
The foundation, can, you can have a whole separate account.
I recommended to the Chamber of Commerce that we follow the normal procedures, legal procedures for the funding that we receive from them so that it goes to the books, it's recognized, and it goes with the item. So, you know, I would have to go back to the chamber if we did anything wrong.
Because it's a special fundraising for a particular day,
right.
It can go to the foundation for that. Just because it's $5 to $10, it's a lot of people. It's a lot of them, max one and max four.
Right.
Can I ask one question? Because it's also a lot of paperwork for the foundation.
Uh-huh.
So I'm also wondering, because it's such a small amount of money, I mean, does the MAC really, like, I can't, as a MAC member, ask Erica for $20 so I can go buy a balloon?
You can. You can do that as individuals, but you know.
But I can't ask everybody.
But really? As a MAC, you cannot ask as a body for that money.
Without approval
from the
Board of
Supervisors.
But we can ask each other.
But we as the foundation could.
Yeah. I mean, let's say here's how you can get around. Here's one item, not around it, but here's one. You, Wendy, can be the collector of all the 5s and 10s and 20s.
Uh-huh.
And as a, when you reach $200, you make that contribution, make that deposit to the foundation.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Or she can just spend them. I know, why can't they just spend
the money? You can
money?
Do that too.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the technical difference I'm not understanding.
You as an individual is doing it.
Or just, it's just private donations, right?
Private
donations for balloons for an event, right?
You can, you know, I don't think that there's a problem.
Except that as a MAC member, can I ask all the other MAC members to give me money?
I'd like to amend it to stress that we have that give information out in some very concise form about what the general plan is going to do on both APM Way and Dam Road. You've got an excellent opportunity to do it. I mean, you can slant it your way or whatever, but, you know, let them know for sure what's happening. And see what they think.
There's an amendment out. So,
I'll accept that amendment and keep the original proposal that includes going with what Susan said with an emphasis on making sure the general plan amendment information is included.
I would love to amend that to add that you're going to go after donations.
Yes.
Because remember, you had said go after it to share it with the grant, or with the old friend grant, and I'm saying for donations. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're asking for donations at the stroll? Is that what you're saying?
No.
To fund that too.
It comes from donations.
Okay.
So you accept that?
That's fine.
Okay.
For my own second.
Any? There's a motion.
I would like to even second it.
Yeah. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to 0, huh?
Okay. So we're back on information items, and I had a question about 10.2.
I'm trying to write and do this. Okay.
Yes,
so you had a letter. See if I can find it now. This is a big 10. Was it 10.2? It was
yes.
A letter about. Okay. I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time finding it.
It's 10.2.1.
Dear Mr. Cross, okay, got it. That's the one I'm talking about. Dear Mr. Cross from Barbara Pendergrass, 10.2X. Oh, W, okay. You have a statement on here about, for this particular 120 Renfrew Road development, schools and sidewalks. The project is less than a mile from the Elsa Graney Elementary School and the Church School in Apian Way. I believe it is Bethel Academy School. There's a county ordinance that requires sidewalks on at least one side of the street. Okay. I just want to tell you that Bethel does not connect with that. Bethel is young kids. All of them are driven. They don't walk there. I don't think that you should be imposing something like this. I mean, it's going to add a lot of expense to the development, number one. Number two, you were telling me last month that you were sort of bemoaning the fact that 1 million plus at Portofino Villas. I mean, something like this is going to add a lot of extra cost to these.
They were required to do that project. The $1 million project is always required.
Okay.
And I have a letter.
But this 120 Renfrew Road is the one next to it, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a different one. So what I'm just trying to say is Bethel Academy, there's no real reason to require sidewalks for that because the kids don't walk there, number one. Number two, even if you have them, they still have to walk out on a road with no sidewalks. So I don't get it. I mean,
there
I don't
is a county ordinance in Bethel that's pointing out that says if it's a mile or less and the elementary school has to be, I think, 0.6 miles. And I'm not talking about the Bethel. I'm talking about the...
No, I hear you. Mm-hmm.
So that's all I'm pointing out, that it should follow county ordinance and for the safety of the kids. Okay, any other questions?
In general or to that topic?
Well, we're on 10.2.
Yeah, I'd like to say one more thing about 10.2W too, if she gets to it.
Okay.
Under agricultural resources, this is another kind of way that the PNC and the Elsa Graney Mac and the appointed kind of people look at it. You're looking at the fact that
what page are you on? 10.2W.
Back to your letter, okay. You're looking at this development as a loss of pasture land in the Elsa Graney area. Elsa Graney is still inside, I mean, the ULL, the urban limit line. I mean, I love pasture land. I love it, too. I mean, I have land I keep open and pay taxes on it. But to use the loss of pasture land to try to stop a development, I mean, the only way you could keep it would be to keep the pasture land. So it would stop the development. I don't understand your reasoning that Elsa Graney should have pasture land.
All I'm stating here is what it was, and I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying this is what it was, and this was the law, and that's it. I'm commenting on the negative deaths that were done.
Right, but it doesn't have a significant effect on the environment to have a loss of pasture land in Elsa Graney, and this is what it implies, you're saying.
Well, you could be perfectly right to disagree with what.
Okay, I'm just making that comment here in this meeting from reading this because it's on the agenda.
Okay.
I don't see that as in a significant effect on the environment.
And I accept what you said.
As much as I love animals, and I've got tons of them, and I just don't see it in this particular case.
Okay, I understand that. Any other questions? Any other information items that people want to comment on?
Is this the point where I can ask about Spanish Trails, or is
yes.
that, okay. What's going on with Spanish Trails? It's just like sitting there, I mean, you're also on the PNZDB, might you know too, or?
I'll have to ask.
Okay.
I don't have quite the retention of all those projects that she has.
Well, it's just under construction right now. They've torn out so much of that hillside back in there. And you could call that it's possibly public works and ask for an update on it. It's really up to the developers to push things along right now, and they're in the process of getting things done. But
is it completely okayed? I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Have they gotten all their stuff together?
Oh yeah. It was approved probably a year ago.
So it's just a matter of them moving along to build it.
Yes.
And they're just kind of dragging their feet.
And they're doing a lot of work in their feet out that hillside and digging out the old piles of cement that were moved in there and buried under.
And that is going to stay in unincorporated Elsa Drain. It won't be in that direction. Okay. That's all I want to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments on that section? Community update? Any other subcommittees?
As far as the fire thing, I guess we already talked about the fire district making it. Okay, so that's already.
Do you want any information or talk about
things here?
It's probably late.
Is there any other information people want? The number has a couple of announcements. First of all, the creek is having with the city built for a salt event on July 23rd. There's two bands, they're donating their time, they're 10 feet bands, and then tickets are $15 or $2.25. If that's Boys and Girls Club. The other announcement I want to make is on the 23rd.
But when was that? I'm sorry, the salt
July, yeah, July 22nd.
July 22nd, okay. It's there's a benefit for.
There's some flyers over there.
Friends of Garrett.
Yes, and Boys and Girls Club.
And the Boys and Girls Club, too. It's a benefit for them, okay.
Also, on the 23rd, I heard at the chamber meeting last night, at the 23rd, the Sam Powell Dam Road and Aiken from the church, from the temple, on the Dam Road, all the way to the triangle on Aiken, is going to be a big parade on July 23rd.
What kind of parade?
And it's going to be members of their, from all over. They're going to have floats. They're going to have.
Oh, the Indians? The Indian Sikhs will be there?
Yes.
Okay.
They're calling it a peace march.
Yes, peace march. And they'll have five food booths, free food.
Oh, now that I like.
And 10,000 to 4,000 people are definitely.
Yeah, so it's going to be a large.
So it's a Sikh extravaganza, huh?
So just so that you're aware of that.
That's on a Saturday, I guess.
It's a Saturday. What's
Saturday? Wait, come on.
No, ours is on Saturday. It's on Sunday.
Oh, it's a Sunday. What is the time? Did they tell you what time it is?
10 to 3. Good. Here's some flyers over there. Is there. Anything else, Erica?
Yeah, for agenda for next meeting, mm-hmm. A couple of thoughts.
Okay.
Our land use meeting was Monday night, but that was because our June meeting was postponed. And we had talked about, what is it, July, I don't know, the fourth Tuesday in July, keeping that time so Barbara and I, when he's going to be out of town, could actually go through Aiken Way and try to go block by block. I'm actually wondering if at the next MAP meeting we could present just all the information that we have thus far and try to really publicize the meeting and get some feedback from the community at that point.
Publicize the
meeting. Just so we can get a bit of a pulse on I don't really have an idea of where the PC stands and what they want.
Can one of us talk to the library? Sometimes they put our meeting out and sometimes they don't. I've talked to them. What's the deal with them? Because that's a good way to publicize it.
Yeah,
they just, and we're the ones that just, you know, got the sign out there, you know.
I think it'd be really important if the town hall is really going to be in October, we really need to.
Why don't you guys go as a group and go talk to maybe three of you?
Yeah. I'm already talking to her about it.
One thing. And then I'm just feeling incredibly indebted to Patrick and the flood control for writing letters in response to the draft ERs. And I'm just wondering if we, as a MAC, might want to just write a thank you letter or just acknowledging that. I don't know if that's sort of overboard. I mean, I realize it's their job, but I also do feel like a lot of time went into this. And
okay.
What is that for?
To write
a letter
to the
supervisor
that she
can't make
the
recommendation.
Why don't you just write one
from yourself? If you look in there, that resolution, it says
the city will never provide for funding.
I know, but I think.
Yeah, but you also write a note to the chamber.
Oh, yeah. We definitely should write a letter to the chamber.
For what are we writing notes now?
The chamber for the $300 and for the
information. So it's one, a letter to Patrick Roach, thanking Patrick Roach, right, for EIR comments on dam?
No, on the Forest Green.
For Forest Green comments?
And then Tim Jensen, associate civil engineer, flood control for the comments to the
oh, copy Tim Jensen or
no, separate letter. He wrote a separate letter.
Letter to Tim Jensen. And who is he?
He's associate civil engineer at flood control.
Is that a county thing?
Yes. You're saying we should send those thank you to him too.
Yeah, he wrote a good letter about the seismic upgrade.
Our letter. We don't know whether our letter went anywhere.
Yes, it did.
Either
went
to the supervisor.
No,
no,
it went on.
So, let's see, there's a third letter. We're writing a letter to who?
No, he did.
I need to make the minutes now. There's three letters here. There's one to Patrick Roach, one to Tim Jensen, and one to
Chamber President
for thanking for money, right?
And waiving the stroll.
For contribution. And wait.
You
know, actually, that should have been on the agenda, but I'm not going to say, I don't care, but it used to be we had to vote on letters with the max sent. You had to be on the agenda, you had to vote on it. The letters for Tim Jensen and I don't care. I'm just saying. Technically, you really have to.
I'm asking for it to be on the agenda.
Oh, okay. Got okay. So let me change what I'm saying. I thought you were going to send a letter. Okay.
So you have to that'll be on the agenda part of the letters and
those are three letters
presenting our findings about the project area.
Could you send me an email so I can make sure that it's in the paper well ahead of time, stating the topic the way you would like to have it? Because
about the downtown area.
Yes, so I can make sure, and I'll just yell at the call. They don't always do this.
I know.
I'm really lobbying. And the woman in the front of mine left. I moved. It's 10:58.